Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for this 24th day of July, 2020. This is, of course, The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. If you jump in now, you'll be met by Jimmy, an original sailor chick, and Roger in Oregon, and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, while a apparently third stage guild navigators take July off, because Sparky has not folded space in quite some time to the man cave, and for darn fine reasons, I might add, being as how it's miserably hot there in the man cave and all. Hi, I'm Bob, and every program here at the Horn, including this here Friday on the front porch, begins with gratitude. So thanks go out on this Friday on the front porch to our 24th of the month subscribers. That means thanks going out to Pam in Washington State, to Samson, and to Josh. Thank all three of you for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep this independent effort at uncensored and uncompromising liberal progressive radio on the air. As yeah, that's good. I'm sorry, that was it. Sparky just posted a photo in the chat room of Nitwit Nero holding that, you know, that little Fisher Price toy where the baby takes the decreasingly sized rings and stacks them on the little plastic spike. And yeah, Sparky posted a picture there of Nitwit Nero holding one.
Aced it.
Oh, our poor country. I know. So anyway, the fundraising goal to finish the week and not have some sort of great big hole to fill in come Morin Monday is $540, and that includes, by the way, a $100 anonymous "When Donnie chooses, you loses" challenge. Thank you very kindly for the challenge. The first $100 that come in get doubled, but we don't get the $100 if the $100 doesn't come in. So that would take it. That would knock out the rest of Wednesday, $40, and it would knock out $160 of yesterday, leaving us another 140 to go, or another 200, yeah, 240 to go. Oh, the ciphering. So hopefully folks will take advantage of that challenge and we'll get everything knocked out, and I'll pay some more bills over the weekend, and we'll be a little closer to knowing for sure that we'll have another month of broadcasting coming along. It would be fine and dandy by me. Another picture in the chat room, the goon squad, the little goon men, little green goons, are arriving in Seattle because it is the fondest desire of the white supremacists and the neo-Nazis and the skinheads and the proud boys and the boogaloo boys and all the various and sundry flavors of fascist assholes in this country to have a civil war. And the president of the United States is doing his dead-level best to accommodate them. And, you know, our buddy Trey pointed this out to me earlier today. He didn't source it, but it makes perfectly good sense. And I kind of wonder why I didn't think of this in the first place. It just sent me a message on Twitter that said, Eric Prince is behind the Little Green Goon Squad. You know, the evangelical Christian mercenary guy, the brother of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, who wants to send our children back to almost certain death for at least a million American children, that Eric Prince. Perfect sense. Perfect sense. And wouldn't surprise me a damn bit. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs. Ralphs getting us started on the When Donnie Chooses, You Loses challenge. Ralphs says, I'll contribute 10 to the challenge. And then after it's met, after the whole challenge is met, Ralphs will kick in an extra $25. So that would get us almost to the point of having yesterday taken care of. But we just got to meet the other $90 of the challenge first. Thank you, Ralphs. I think I got that... I think I understood that. Flavio says, I could have told you Eric Prince was behind that. I think I did before. I don't. Maybe you did. You know, this stuff all runs together after a while. In the case of the little green goons going to Seattle, Sparky tells me they were Border Patrol from where else? Texas. Yeah, match. Why am I not surprised? No morals, no ethics, no conscience. You're hired. That's kind of the hiring policy for the nitwit Nero administration. Note coming in from. By the way, Stephen New York says the new Trump name. That's Donald J. Trump, and the J stands for Jefferson Davis. A little too close for comfort. Oh, no. Kyle with a note, and our sympathies go out. Kyle says, just to let you know, Bob, I probably won't be emailing for a while, so I haven't disappeared or quit the show or anything, as I deal with the loss of a friend who lost her battle with depression. Horn family, please speak up if you're not okay. Please don't suffer alone. You don't have to. Please know, Horn family, you are loved and supported, and please reach out to those who love you, especially in these trying times. Check on loved ones. Much love to the Horn community, to Bob, to Agnes. Stay safe, and we'll get through all this shit together. Kyle, those are kind and warm and loving words. And I'm glad you wrote them, although terribly sad under the circumstances that inspired you to do so. But what Kyle says is so true. These are hard times, and depression is very real, and it's hard to, these times make it even harder. So if you're hurting, please tell somebody. If you're in this community and you're hurting, please reach out to someone in the community. There's a lot of connections that have been made among the Horn Family Community Congregation. Don't sit on your agony. Please share it, so that others can help you through. It's like one of my favorite movie lines from Mate One. All we got in common is our misery. So the least is we can do is Sherrod. Yeah, I saw that. Bad news, Bob, says Randy in PA. Cancer spread to Ruth Bader Ginsburg's liver. That's never a good sign. And so she is hanging on, literally, for dear life, hanging on for the sake of the country she loves, to try to keep the Supreme Court from going full-on jackboot fascist. And all we can do is hope. All we can do is hope. Thank you. Thank you most kindly to Jeremy for getting us started. Thank you very much indeed. For joining in, with Ralph's and getting us started. That means there's $85 to go in the anonymous When Donnie Chooses, You Lose His Challenge. Thank you, Jeremy. And let's see, a note to start the program from Joey. Bob! That's spelled B-A-A-A-A-A-A-A-A-W-W-W-W-W-W-B. Bob! I think that's how it's pronounced. Some of the opening day events for Major League Baseball were amusing and actually thoughtful and good. I didn't see much of the opening activity in D.C. except for Dr. Fauci in his... Now, Joey here says meager. I thought that was as fine a first pitch as been lately thrown, especially because traditionally, whenever there's a baseball team in Washington, D.C., the president usually throws out the first pitch. But he didn't, and I'm glad of it. But in his meager attempts to get the baseball to home plate from the mound, I was proud of Fauci, even though his efforts with the baseball fell far short of their intended goal. He made a great pitch to reach the catcher's mitt. The metaphor wrote itself, as Fauci's been trying to make a pitch to reach nitwit Nerona and the maggots for months now, but that far-flung fling has fallen short as well. Fauci was supposed to lob a curveball to the plate where an anxious batter was waiting to, well, you know, flatten the curve with one mighty swing. Lots of baseball analogies here. Unlike Trump, who was loudly booed in the stadium at last year's World Series, I think Fauci would have been cheered and revered. On the other hand, in Los Angeles, somehow a maggot dressed in a San Francisco Giants uniform managed to make it onto the field. Yes, actually, this maggot Marona was legitimately on the field because he's a pitcher for the Giants and now a major embarrassment to the organization and certainly to the city of San Francisco. When all of the other players on both teams knelt for a moment of silence on the Black Lives Matter movement, this rod stood up and later stated it was against his religion of Christianity to kneel for anybody but the baby Jeebus. Just to demonstrate how stupid he is, after the game, he said that Black Lives Matter appears to be too much like Marxism, and yes, he was also spotted wearing a maggot red hat. The player's name is Sam Coonrod, and I wonder if this guy ever actually studied Marxism, or Christianity for that matter, because if he did, he might discover some similarities to what Christ stood for in the tenets of Marxism. Or does he just watch Fox News and never read a book or a newspaper? Jesus Christ encourages all his followers to take care of the poor, and he even says that true Christians should rid themselves of their earthly belongings and give them to the poor. Jesus says to take care of the poor, the homeless, and the hungry, as according to Christ, what you do to the least of these, you've done also unto me. In my mind, Jesus was the greatest socialist to ever live. Marxism and socialism are very similar in that Karl Marx advocated for the proletariat or the working class to control the means of production. The proletariat was the lowest class of people in ancient Rome. Marx believed that the proletariat, or the working people, were oppressed by capitalism and fascism, both of which allow for the very wealthy to control the means of production and the working class proletariat as well. Harsh capitalism and fascism normally drive down wages for working class, while the wealth of a nation soars to the top or to the bourgeoisie, the filthy rich. I always thought of bourgeoisie as being the sort of the okay middle class. But somehow, I don't believe Jesus would support capitalism, fascism, or our loser leader in the White House, Trump. So sorry, Sam, your pathetic excuse for not kneeling last night was lame. Rod, what you really are, is a racist who just could not stand the thought of assisting Major League Baseball in recognizing the plight of many African Americans in this country and many of the players in the major leagues. I'm quite confident that Jesus Christ would have knelt down last night in honor and remembrance of those who have been brutalized, mistreated, and murdered by the police in our society over the years. I only wish the fans were in the stands this season so they could boo you just like they booed your buddy Trump last fall. This has been Joey's Journal for Friday, the 24th day of July, with Giraffrey kneeling to take a stand. Thank you, Joey. It was impressive to see the players all kneeling before the opening game there in, was it New York? D.C.? Profound indeed. And thank you. Ralph says, I love Joey's notes and Giraffe's notes, too. Thanks, Ralphs. Let's see. Thank you, Barbara. Barbara just took us down to, let's see. Barbara just took us down to $45 to go to match our anonymous challenge. And Frank just took us down to $20 to go. So there's $20 to go in the anonymous when Donnie chooses, you lose his challenge. That's wonderful to know. Randy, going back to the note from Kyle, offering some perspective and some sympathy. You don't know it until you've had it. Years of depression and stress can make one wish they had never been born. I've known several people. Some near and dear to me who have battled with it, and it is crushing to behold. So at least in this community, I'm comfortable in saying that if someone reaches out, they will find a friendly hand and a solid shoulder. And that's one of the most impressive things about this community that you all have built over the past approaching two decades. Yeah, and I need to address this. Don says, I don't know if you're aware or not, but Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday's podcast to Apple failed to be available for download. I, of course, have no idea of the problem, but you haven't mentioned it, so thanks for reminding me, Don. Have a good weekend, afternoon and weekend, Don says. You too. We use Podbean because it's one of the least expensive of the podcasting services. And I try to have some redundancy with White Rose Society. And they did a redesign and an update of their interface. And everything is all squirrely now. Brother Deacon Asa brought it to my attention. Let's be clear, though. I screwed up the Tuesday podcast, and so it's just not there. But Wednesday and Thursday did go up, and they are both at whiterosesociety.org under the Kincaid subpage. And so you can find it there. Hopefully, Brother Deacon Asa will be able to tell me if I need to do anything to get Podbean squared up again. But apparently I'm trying to find the exact language so that I can explain what happened without making more of a fool of myself than ordinary. What they've done is they've changed the RSS feed URL, and that broke everything that depends on Podbean to receive the podcast, like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and the Horn website. So Brother Deacon Asa says, I'll have to go find the new RSS feed and update all of those platforms. What they're saying now, according to Randy and PA, is that our SSL certificate is no longer valid. Perfect. But if you want those, if you want the Wednesday and Thursday's podcast, you can always go to White Rose and grab it. As Ralph says, the White Rose Society Kincaid podcast is golden. So as long as I don't screw up the code on the upload with that, it's always there. Oh, and thank you to Sailor Chick. Thank you very kindly. The challenge is finished. It has been met. And there's 15 on top of that. So we are, let's see. We are $325 away from being done, which means that basically, $300, $300 even. So half of yesterday's done, and then we got to do today. Thank you, Sailor Chick. Thank you, Sharon. That takes us down to 290. Thank you very much indeed. Maybe we've got a fighting chance of getting out of the week to the good. And as Jimmy notes from the Great Northwest, always tell your friends and family you're there for them and you love them. And that goes to extended friends and extended family, too. Remember what Gertrude Stein said. Friends are the family you choose for yourself. And that's in part why many, many years ago, we couldn't decide if we were a Horn family, a Horn community, or a Horn congregation. So we became the Horn Family Community Congregation, or the Horn Family Congregation Community. It's entirely up to you. There's the mean and the stupid on any given day. Oh, and by the way, this is Friday on the Front Porch, as mentioned. And that means that here in about, 35 minutes or so, we'll go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, for where we keep the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, around which we gather every Friday. If you'd like to be part of that, remember, just go over to headon.live and click on the big button at the top of the page, and it'll kick you right in, right over the river and right through the woods. There is, like I said, in the news of any given day, there's a breathtaking degree of just pig-eyed meanness and a breathtaking degree of hateful stupidity. And then there's Kayleigh McEnany, who encompasses the very worst of both of those ideas, and more, which means less. David in South Carolina sent this one along. I saw it earlier today. I was like, what? So, the maggots are all butthurt over what they have decided to describe or term cancel culture. Now, what cancel culture is, as we sort of discussed a little bit earlier in the week, or maybe last week, when people say ugly, mean, hateful, stupid, bigoted, racist, shitty things, they are, in this era, called out on social media. And things like boycotts happen. Like when the president and CEO of Goya Foods declared that Donald Trump really loves him some Hispanic people, when everybody knows that the opposite is true. See Mexican rapists, see not sending us their best. See little brown babies in cages, et al., et sec., et cetera. E.g., CF, IBID, i.e. And so, because the butthurt maggots so desperately wish to be able to, well, what it boils down to is they want to be able to use that word that's got all the same letters as ginger freely and openly and frequently, just like their grandpappies and great-grandpappies and great-grandmammies and great whatever. You know, the good old days back when America was great, according to them. And because they can't, they are aggrieved. Some of the most aggrieved people you've ever met, and they call us snowflakes. And so they've come up with this idea of cancel culture, that we've just got this terrible, terrible problem in America where we've become so politically correct that nobody's free to say what they want to say lest they face cancel culture. Well, Kayleigh McEnany, the undying shame of Harvard University and the Ivy League generally, she said, and the story is from today, bear in mind there's a Nickelodeon Junior cartoon called Paw Patrol, and it's about rescue dogs who look out for the place where they live. Precisely, Flavio says, cancel culture, a term invented by bigots who got called out on their bigotry. So, somehow or another, in the process of talking about the fascist assault on Portland and the coming assault on Chicago, she said, the president is keen on seeing the violence in our streets, and he's also appalled by cancel culture, and cancel culture specifically as it pertains to cops. We saw a few weeks ago that Paw Patrol, a cartoon show about cops, was canceled. The show Cops was canceled. Live PD was canceled. Lego halted the sales of their Lego City police station. Well, you got to remember that Kayleigh McEnany is, of course, a Christian. That means she's a liar. Because, among other things, you can still buy the Lego police station from the Lego website. And Paw Patrol has been renewed for an 8th season. Happened earlier this year. The Paw Patrol movie's due out in 2021. Little kids just love Paw Patrol. But Kayleigh McEnany, not cancel culture, Kayleigh McEnany tried to cancel Paw Patrol. And so Paw Patrol found it necessary to go to their Twitter account and say, no need to worry, Paw Patrol is not canceled. Fucking twit. No, I added that part. God, what an ignoramus. What a maroon. This is how cultural shifts take place. By being conscious of them, we can participate in them and help to advance them. See, I just referred, and maybe the civility patrol out there objects to me referring to us, referring to Kayleigh McEnany as a twit and a moron and a moran and ignoramus. But it actually means I'm making progress. Because I was able to describe Kayleigh McEnany, a despicable, mendacious, two-faced, rotten, horrible, terrible, awful, no good attempt at a member of the human race, without referring to gender. Isn't that great? I mean, it's not that I want to, you know, you don't have to mail me a cookie or anything, but I got it. I'm learning. And we've all got a pretty good idea of the available terms, but I didn't use them. And hopefully I'm kind of setting a little bit of an example. We can find gender-free terms. And in fact, I'm not entirely certain why it is that we use reference to bodily, to genitals. And this is a real cultural question. Why do we refer to genitals? I mean, I know I occasionally still do take recourse to Professor Spicoli because it just comes in handy somehow. But why do we use genitals as an insult? When in fact, regardless of whether one is gay, straight, or any other position on the spectrum, all of us, to one degree or another, rather enjoy genitals. So why do we use them as insults? Now, maybe it would make sense if we were referring to genitals as insults if we put some sort of modifier in front of them, suggesting that the genitals were perhaps syphilitic. But we humans are odd, odd people. What a strange species we are. Truly. I'm just checking on how we were. Okay. By the way, Silent R. Lamar, with a bit of a correction, says, Bob, and he'll be hearing from Ron and Raleigh's lawyers. Bob, they can use the N-word if they want to, especially if they don't mind going to the dentist for some new fake teeth. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, rhinoplasty for having had their nose squashed across their face. See, they've still got freedom. Mm-hmm. Randy, taking me up on my inquiry and says, let's face it, Bob, they're ugly. We're a strange species. Definitely. Yeah. Well, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa says you are making progress. The term what came to a Brother Deacon's mind was boop. I bleeped that out. Bob, stop patting yourself on the back. Okay. Bob, stop telling us how bad evangelicals lie. There we go. Okay. See, Greg's marching proudly into the future now. Syphilitic bones, boner spurs? Yes. Now, I understand references to excretory functions because, you know, smelly. And Donald J. Trump really does have a mouth that looks like a cat's ass. That's not an insult. That's just good literary description. Meanwhile, we've got this will probably go on for the rest of the night. Steve in New York says, Randy and PA, objection. Without getting into details, I object to the statement that they're ugly. Oh, it's a matter of, you know, I to the extent that they work as intended, I think the aesthetics of it should be judged that way. But, oh, never mind. otherwise, everybody will be jumping in on this topic and we'll never get to anything else. And I've got some anything else. This comes from the Department of, well, doesn't that just beat cats fucking? Which is not a reference to anything being ugly or, it's just, you know, noisy. It's noisy. The story comes out of Georgia, of course. Where one of the counties that is presently hardest hit by the Trump pandemic is a suburban Atlanta county that is absolutely ablaze with the Rona. That's Gwinnett County. It's kind of both in and outside the Beltway, or the perimeter. I'm sorry, it's the perimeter in Atlanta. It's the Beltway in D.C. And it used to be just kind of a bedroom community, and it's largely been just swallowed up by the increasing expansion of Hotlanta. But it's very suburban, and at present, Gwinnett County makes up 14,442 of the over 156,500 cases of COVID-19 in the state. 209 people in Gwinnett County have died. That's according to the Georgia Department of Public Health. And so, trying to make the decision as far out in front as possible so as to make it possible for parents to plan accordingly, the Board of Education of Gwinnett County, which, by the way, is named after one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. He was a member of the Georgia delegation. His name was Button Gwinnett. And that's about his only claim to fame. He's also one of the rarest autographs in the world. I think there are 51 instances of his signature. Only 10 of them are out in private hands where autograph collectors can purchase them. One of his signatures is, of course, on the Declaration of Independence. And that's about all he was good for, because before the Revolution was ever over, a guy named McIntosh blew him away in a duel because they didn't like each other. But I guess that's enough, you know, signing the Declaration of Independence and getting blown away in a duel. That's enough to get you a county named after you in a place like Georgia. So the Gwinnett County School Board declared that schools would be online only this year, beginning in the fall. Because they don't, I mean, I should think this would be obvious, but because they don't want children to die, and they don't want teachers to die, and they don't want support staff to die, and bus drivers to die, and they don't want their children taking the Rona home to mommy and daddy, or grandma and grandpa, meemaw and papaw, and have them get sick and die. The reasoning is not difficult to suss out. But, of course, suburban Atlanta, I suppose, is a very maggoty place. And now, parents of school-age children are gathering and protesting outside the Gwinnett County School Board, insisting that the school board kill their children. Now, what they're demanding is they say that they want children to be able to go back to school. Which, in this day and age, is the same thing as saying, hey, we want you to do the best you can to kill our kids. Or, well, we love our kid. Our kid won't get that nasty disease. We want you to kill somebody else's kids. That's okay with us. And being as how they're maggots, Trump voters and whatnot, you can pretty well guess which kids it's okay to kill. And so one mask hole COVIDiot has declared that Joanne Bayouk said, the virus is not going away. We know it's not going away. We have to enforce some sort of normal. And though our normal is going to change, our kids need to go back. Then there's Kelly Williard, who has organized the group. And they've got about 1,400 people and growing. She said they're just starting their protests, and she sure does hope that she can spread the protest to state and national levels. Sherry Mitchell's another parent in the group, and she said, as far as an ideal outcome now, it's going back to the two solutions, giving us the choice for digital and open schools. Because they want the little kids out from underfoot. They've been dealing with them since March, and they're about sick of it, and they want to put them back in school. Now, the Gwinnett County School Board surveyed parents in the county. And based upon a district-wide survey, only 43% of the parents wanted a return to in-person instruction. 23% said, we'd like to have in-person instruction with digital learning. And 34% of the group said, digital learning only. And they pushed back the beginning of school to August the 12th, giving the district additional time to review and adjust its return to school plans to best meet students' needs and reflect the most updated guidance from public health officials. And right proud of herself, Ms. Williard said that we made them buckle to political pressure when we told them we wanted the schools to open so kids could die. See, that's buckling to political pressure when you announce that you're going to have online or only learning. That's buckling to political pressure. Yeah. On the other hand, school board officials said it's due to the current COVID-19 situation in our county and the rising number of cases in Gwinnett County. There are over 1,700 people in the hospital with the Rona in Gwinnett County alone. Can you wrap your head around that? I would, and we've been talking about it here, Agnes and I, and with our daughter, about the grandbabies, not babies anymore, the grandkids going back to school. And Agnes and I are like, oh, hell no. And our daughter is of the same mindset. I mean, I know it's hard on kids. You know what's harder on kids? Seeing, well, not even seeing, because you have to be isolated. Knowing that mommy's lying flat on her tummy with a garden hose down her throat, having machine do her breathing for her, and then burying mommy or daddy or granny or granddad. That's really hard on kids. Harder than not being able to go to school and LARP and Smolik and Grabolate around in the hallways and playing Flinch and yeah. Because these homicidal maniac parents, I guess they fail to take into account that they can't just fling the doors open and say, come on in, and, well, you know, if you die, you die. Because every school board that opens is going to spend, hopefully, I mean, it'd be best if they didn't open at all, according to, you know, real scientists, instead of some jackass who graduated MAGA yell loudly from YouTube University. It's going to cost a fortune in hand sanitizer and masks. And gloves, maybe even gowns, booties, shields. And, you know, I guess they probably want their kids, you know, out there playing sports and everything. And, you know, down there on the line in the football, and playing football and breathing all over each other and sweating. And yeah. The hell is wrong with people? But there you go. There they are. Meanwhile, Ms. Bayouk, quoted earlier, said children with learning differences can be hindered in their learning experiences by virtual learning. I mean, there are some realities out there. Schools, for many children, too many children, are the only place some kids know they get a decent meal. That's fact. That should be a solvable problem. And it's rough for parents who have to go to work every day. But again, a country that once fairly routinely flew to the moon 14 times, 13 of them result, or not 14 times, no. But 11, 12, 13, 14. Yes, yeah, so 5 or 6 times, and all but one were successful. It should be able to sort out that issue too. Hey, look, there are even countries in this on this planet where there's free child care for working parents. Ooh, that's crazy. No, that's communism. Free stuff. Y'all just want free stuff. Why can't we just send our children back and let them roll the dice like the rest of us do? I don't ever want to hear another goddamn maggot ever say that they're pro-life when they're willing to gamble with other children's lives. So, based on the survey, that Gwinnett County put out, 43% wanted to just open schools, period. But 57% wanted some form of online learning available. 23% of them wanted some in-person instruction. But a total of 57% want online schooling available. That means that the school district didn't buckle under political pressure. It was democracy. More people wanted online learning than wanted to open schools and kill children. And so they won because they were in a majority. You know, majority rule. If I hadn't had 3 years to get used to what passes for thought among the maggots, this would be mind-boggling. But I have, and consequently I recognize that maggots are toxic. Maggots are deadly. To paraphrase Yosemite Sam, maggots is so stupid. And we've already seen how much damage a non-majority can do to a once great nation. And they're trying to do more. Consider what's going on in Oregon. And I'm not talking about the protests in Portland. No. They've got a mask mandate. And Governor Kate Brown is being sued. A white wing maggot think tank, no irony there, called the Freedom Foundation. They're suing in the Oregon Court of Appeals for a stay to Kate Brown's mask mandate, with a guy named Jason Dudash, the director of Freedom Foundation, Oregon, saying, governors in left-leaning states all over the country are making up the rules as they go, MAGA, and ignoring MAGA, the procedural rules, MAGA, of their own MAGA, state laws, MAGA set up, MAGA. They're arguing that Kate Brown, as governor of Oregon, didn't have any business ordering people to wear masks in public indoor spaces. And Freedom Foundation says that she can't do it without the legislature passing a bill. So they too are trying to kill people. This country, after having been fascinated for years with ideas of some sort of zombie apocalypse, is now damned well in one. Oh, thank you. I didn't know that. Brother Deacon Asa says, Paw Patrol is Canoodlian. I had no idea. Ah, there we go. Thank you for the clarification. Robert in Australia says, NASA went to the moon 9 times. Apollos 8, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. 24 men have orbited the moon. A couple went twice. NASA landed 6 times. 12 men walked on its surface. All came home safely. Yeah, 13 was the one that failed to achieve its goal. So that's pretty much the filibobster. Toxic maggots. Maggots, maggots everywhere. And not a one to think. Simon R. Lamar, who's in education, says, can I think way out of the box on opening schools? How about treating school as a summer camp, rent a large hotel, and the students and teachers and support staff will live there, and so they can control the learning conditions and keep it under control, and Trump's government and the states can pay for it? What do you think? Well, that involves paying for things. And so that's going to be a non-starter. Because remember, maggots only want their children in schools. They don't necessarily want to pay for them. Which does considerably complicate matters. So that's the tip of the iceberg, which is usually a Tuesday kind of thing. But there's a whole bunch more. We never really got around to talking about the way that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez dog-walked Florida maggot Ted Yoho yesterday after he got caught calling her a fucking bitch. So that's a, you know, that's a potential topic of discussion. And let's just find out what's on folks' mind. Let's see where. Oh, yeah, and Flavio says, and you never mentioned Clorox Claudius boasting of his goons beating up Portland's mayor. Yeah, he did that, too. Mind-boggling. Maybe we can also discuss something that happened way back in 2017, when a little 6-year-old boy was prevented from becoming a 7-year-old boy, a little 6-year-old Texas boy in Bexar County. Yep, sheriff's deputies prevented him from becoming a 7-year-old by blowing him away, going after a nonviolent offender. Cops were going after a nonviolent offender and decided to blow him away and blew away a 6-year-old boy instead. Oh, Jesus. Oh, let's run over and see what's going on with the bunch. The Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable Gang. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
Kilo 11 and Kilo 12 are walking the creek line.
107 who's got the radio? Who's got the scanner going?
Right, hold your position right there.
Roger, Christopher.
Okay, that needs to go away.
Okay, guys, that unit that I just told to stop, there's a mortgage.
Well, I wore the mask for the first time. Junk right in front of you. Store.
We don't know what's in there.
Only one person said anything to me, and that was the guy at the deli, wanted to know where I got it.
Yeah. Hey, that's really crazy making.
Hey, those units are going in. Are we going to just go search this, or are we waiting?
Is that me sending that?
I don't hear it now.
Yeah, I just heard the mic trigger. I can still hear it. I don't see any open audio on my end.
Christopher's the only one in the courtroom.
Yeah, he's muted.
He's muted.
Yeah, I'm muted, guys.
Okay, this is nuts.
What side of the creek? North or south side of the creek?
Oh, by the way, did we have a shit show today?
Are we north or south side of the creek?
I don't think so. I think he'd probably want to go get away, get out of work, D.C. and go play golf.
Ah, there it is. Yeah, this is the that's actually the audio of the Bexar County Sheriff's deputies getting ready to blow away the little 6-year-old boy. I found it. That was on me. My bad.
Okay.
All better now. So,
okay. So like I was telling you, I wore that one mask.
Yeah, the only comment was, where can I get one?
Yeah, from a kid working at the deli. But he says, oh, I don't think they'll let me wear it here, though. And I said, I don't think they will either.
Never know till you try.
But while I was in there, two sheriff's deputies walk in there with no masks. I was standing waiting at the deli, and they walked in front of me. Well, one did. And he just kind of, they both kind of disappeared. Soon after that, I didn't know what they were doing. Thought they were getting their lunch.
Well, I actually happened to check in on Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice's press conference this afternoon. And it kind of blew my mind, Sparky. He was actually gooning on a fellow maggot governor. He gooned on the governor of Florida and said, now y'all have done a great job flattening the curve here in West Virginia, and in no way, shape, form, or fashion do we ever want to be Florida. They're just a mess. They won't wear their masks. I was, oh my goodness. Maybe he's not afraid of, I mean, he's got billboards and posters up showing Trump and Justice and Trump making West Virginia great again. But the fact of the matter is, Jim Justice is rich like Trump can only dream of being rich. And he sucked up several millions of dollars of PPP money when he could have just kept his companies open with his own fortune. But I found it very interesting that he felt comfortable talking about what a shitty job Florida's doing. Oh, okay. Sailor Chick in the chat room tells me Baghdad Barbie. Oh, what a, wait a minute. Baghdad Barbie had a little mini shit show. I guess they have to get Nitwit Nero ready for his golf weekend.
Yeah, that I didn't think about that one. I just kind of ignore her.
God, she's an idiot.
I want two TV breaks from my hands if I see her on the TV.
Oh, it's hard to imagine. I mean, how do you, what happened? After you get admitted to Harvard, do they just say, stick around for 4 years, don't bother to learn anything, and we'll give you the degree? Is that how that works?
I don't know.
Because she can't have learned anything there. I mean, look, I went to a little state law school, and, you know, undergrad, same school, and actually had to do some work. But it's obvious to me that, I don't know, is that social promotion? I don't know.
Was she rich going in?
Yeah, her parents owned some sort of contracting company. I mean, do you reckon there's anybody at Harvard who looks at people like her and goes, oh, I used to be proud to work here. Fuck.
I don't know. The only one professor I know of is that Lawrence Tribe guy.
Oh, I mean, but they got lots of professors and.
Yeah, but he's a law guy.
Yeah.
I don't know of any other law professors there.
So you being on the in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone, you're a little well, you know, you can stay up later. What was the Portland show last night?
Oh, can I first talk about Wednesday night? Was the first night they had the fence up?
Yeah,
and they built that with that, and I was looking at the construction of the fence. Now, the steel plates, those fences, you know, they come pre-made in a section. And they have just these legs that pop in the bottom, and they're usually a square on the bottom, and that holds them up, and then they just bolt them together with these clips. And they're easy to take apart. So what they did is they took steel plates and put it underneath where the fence leg is, welded it down to the steel plate, and the plate is long enough to stick out the other side, so they put K-rail on that. So that made it really a sturdy fence. And then in one location, it looked like they had a locked gate that they could go in and out of. But anyway, the protesters get up against the fence, and there was thousands of them, it seemed like. They get up against the fence, they start rattling the fence, and out come the goons and start flinging their tear gas. Remind me of the monkeys coming out of the monkey house, flinging shit, you know. And then they would run back in for a while, and then they'd come back out. Well, last night, after they had that supposed thing of ACLU lawsuit thing that happened where they weren't supposed to harm press people and observers and stuff like that. So nothing really happened till about 1 o'clock at night. And then where everybody was hanging out, goons came out of another area off to their, as I was looking at the picture, the right, and started coming down the side street towards them, where they were all gathered. And then they just started flinging tear gas and got them. Everybody just said, fuck it, and they started going home. And they followed, the goons followed a bunch of them around on a side street. And they just stood across the middle of the street flinging flashbangs and tear gas and keep walking towards them. And that's when I turned it off. This was about, oh shit, close to 2 o'clock in the morning or later.
Yeah, I went to bed early, so I didn't see any of that. But I do know there's a few federal properties in Pioneer Square. And so that's probably, Sparky, what you're talking about when they were coming out of different areas.
Yeah, because that's a big building, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a whole big.
It's like Pioneer a city Square. Block, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think there's different federal buildings in there. The Multnomah Courthouse, I guess that's the federal building that's their reason for being there, or so they say. Yeah, that's their excuse. We have to protect that courthouse, but we know that's horseshit.
Well, they were a long ways away from the courthouse last night when I finally stopped watching.
Yeah, that's the point.
They were a couple blocks away.
There's no real argument over their jurisdiction to protect the courthouse, but that does not mean sorteeing out into the streets to bust heads.
Correct. Basically, once they've crossed their jurisdiction, they're just another regular old thuggish criminal, and they should be arrested. Can you know what? Why aren't the state troopers being called in to arrest them?
I think you need a SWAT team to come in and arrest those guys.
Well, if somebody in the state
surround them, and take them into custody, have them face a state judge.
Rick, you're sharing your screen.
Oh, how the heck? Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out here. Let's see. Yeah, just a second. I'll figure that out here. Oh, stop sharing. Stop sharing. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, that would be kind of interesting. That would be kind of your, I'll use a phrase that may not be politically correct, your, you know, proverbial Mexican standoff, you know? You have a bunch of these green goons, the green men, that are, you know, wearing irregular uniforms with, you know, going up against a whole bunch of SWAT people that are surrounding them. And I guess something would have to give, but I think
he's going to blank.
Yeah, I mean, I think bold action is required. You know, you have to have, you know, that's the only thing that's going to stop this police action that that Trump keeps, propagating and committing.
Well, now that the mayor has gotten tear gassed, isn't it about time for the mayor to go to the organizational meeting of the protests and say, look, here's an experiment we want to try. You tell all your people that the Oregon Police Department wants to stand with the mothers. Mm-hmm. And as soon as those goons come out, they will arrest one or two of those people in green, and we'll find out who the fuck they are and get them the hell out of town. But in order to do that, all these 1,000 or 2,000 protesters you get on the street have to help us set the trap to capture them when they violate the restraining order and then pull that son of a bitch off and jam it up Trump's ass.
Well, he knows who the organizers are.
Yeah, Trump does.
No, I mean, don't. The mayor knows who the organizers are.
That's why I'm saying he goes to the organizers and gets them on his side to assign the police to set a trap to capture a couple of these goons who I do not think are in any way, shape, or form connected to a real federal body other than being a contractor.
Roger, that's a great
question. That's a great idea.
Yeah. I mean,
listening to this program.
Are they ICE or are they just Proud Boys that with police uniforms on? Or QAnon?
Well, they're not even police uniforms. That's kind of the whole point. You remember General Russell Honoré that handled the response to Katrina? And finally it got some semblance of order restored. He's mincing no words. He said, it's bullshit. And he said, those are people wearing the military cloth of our country who are not military. He said, they have no right to wear those fatigues.
There was a picture.
Sure, I caught and I didn't download it and put it on this computer to be able to post it. But there were a group of them walking back into that courthouse. And the military fatigues they were wearing, some of them had their sleeves rolled up to make them short enough. Some of them had their pant legs rolled up to have them short enough. And two of the five or six people in the picture had baseball caps on, turned around with the brim of the cap pointing backwards. Now, any kind of militaristic, and police forces are militaristic, any militaristic outfit has rules and regulations about how to wear the uniform. And wearing a baseball cap turned around backwards,
you're out of uniform.
Best of my knowledge, is absolutely not permitted.
That makes you look like gangbangers or something like that, Roger.
Yeah, but this is why I'm saying that these folks are fucking contractors. Now, I'm not saying they're Blackwater, which has changed their name 15 times. And I'm not saying who they are, but these are not trained paramilitary, peace, police, federal, whatever officers. This is a rogue band of mercenaries that they've brought in and given them fancy toys to go play with.
Yeah. Well, they need to be arrested. They need to be.
Yeah, and once the cops get them, they can put them in a fucking cell and find out who they are.
Yeah. And then they'll be felons, and then they can't vote. which would be really good. We need to take
probably vote. In Oregon they can vote.
Oh, really?
Well, ship them down to Florida and try them in Florida and put $1 million fine against them, and then they can't vote.
Good. Sounds good.
Well, remember, maggots love them. Love them some waterboarding.
Oh yeah.
Water.
We got a lot
water,
of water in Oregon.
Yeah, waterboard the goons. That'll get you some real good information.
Well, I think it's time for some drastic action.
Seattle now, but they came from McAllen, Texas, which is home to the Border Patrol processing facility there.
It's supposed to get up to 100 this weekend, so that'll be interesting, too.
In Portland?
Yep.
So the nights will be really hot. And
oh, yeah.
Well, at least the protesters could be in shorts and T-shirts. The goons are going to be wearing long sleeves and long pants and bulletproof vests.
Yeah.
Maybe the protesters should have like blow dryers, like, you know, with that blow hot air at these.
Well, they got
troops,
the lawn blowers.
You know, right.
Yeah, they're using
leaf blowers now.
But use like hair dryers. That air is hot. Make those people sweat.
Yeah, but you need long extension cords for that.
That's true.
Are there
no, the neat thing I saw was the right behind the moms were some dads with leaf blowers. And they'd fling a tear gas grenade, and the leaf blower crew would come up, blow the gas, and then somebody else would run up and pick up the canister and heave it back over the fence. And the tear gas was so thick you couldn't even see the from between the fence and the wall.
Yeah.
Jude just sent along a photo of the a daylight photo of the exterior of the U.S. courthouse there in Portland. And remember, that's where the manifest injustice that turned the Bundy boys loose took place. Is it not?
Yeah,
it would be.
It is. Yes, it is.
Yeah, in Portland. Yeah.
That whole thing was such a joke.
40 days armed insurrectionists holding off these same federal marshals with guns, and nothing happens to them. People go and throw a frozen water bottle up against the side of a building, and they come out blasting tear gas and rubber bullets.
Take out somebody's eye. Yeah.
Well, they've done all kinds of damage.
The police did kill one of them.
Well, but that was in a quasi low high speed chase, however you want to call
it. Yeah, and the guy
trying to evade,
and the guy committed suicide
out of the car armed.
Yeah, and he committed suicide by cop.
Oh.
Yeah, he was
shot. That wasn't actually at the site that they took over with the guns and occupied.
Yeah, but my point was somebody did something to one of them. They just happened to have trapped him. The FBI was figuring out their every move.
Well, what was the original? Why did they occupy that federal office, that BLM office in the first place? Because they couldn't use BLM land for grazing. Was it a grazing issue?
Oh no, they were the Bundys were grazing. But
they were
of course,
down in Nevada.
But of course,
they were out of Las Vegas.
They're deadbeats. But what they were protesting was the arrest and trial of one of those right wing
Daddy Bundy.
No, it wasn't Daddy. Daddy. There was an arson. A guy was prosecuted for setting fire to setting a brush fire. And they were aggrieved about that.
Oh, it was a local rancher that started fires.
Yeah. And I think the rancher was charged with, you know, some criminal conduct. He was charged with arson and also required to pay the costs of the fire response and so forth, I believe.
But what was the rancher's justification for for arson? I mean, what was he trying to do? Was he trying to do a field burn to control erosion or something?
No, no, no. He was throwing a fit.
Oh, okay.
Because he was another one of those same kind of assholes.
He had no justification for what he did. It was just out of spite or malevolent.
Right.
I think he owned a lot of past due. You know, duties or whatever with regard to the grazing that he was doing on that property, and he refused to pay it. And so
that was the old man Bundy.
Yeah. I don't know.
You're conflating the two issues. The Bundy one was over the fees being paid or not paid.
Yeah, that was BLM. Nevada. That was Nevada.
The one at the wildlife refuge had to do with Dwight and Stephen Hammond.
There they are.
Right.
A federal land arson who believed they were wrongly convicted over the treatment on the federal land arson, and it was near Burns. Anyhow, I posted the link to the article I'm glancing at here. But it had to do with...
It was like a sympathy protest, in other words, you might call it.
No, it was a different number, but the Bundys came up to Oregon to support the people in Oregon.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And then they took over the refuge.
It's a different branch of Bundy Butthurt.
Oh, it was the same family.
Oh, them Bundys. That'd be fun to do a Beverly Hillbillies, but use the Bundy family. You know, let's go raid the BLM ranch. Yeah.
Let's go take over the bird sanctuary.
No. I got even better. Here's the story of a man named Bundy and his cranky old dad who will tell you about the Negro. They were a bunch of brothers who were idiots. And they all walked scot-free. Fuckers. Yeah. But now James in Illinois has got another good angle to this business in Portland. Where are they getting these rental vehicles? James says, I'd like to know why they're renting vehicles. Impound one of these vehicles and find out where they come from. Then put pressure on Hertz or Avis or Enterprise or whoever so there can be a boycott.
We'll find out who's what department of the federal government is paying for those vehicles. You know, is this DOJ? Is this William Barr? Is he a is
oh,
this?
I'm sure Barr's behind all this shit.
Yeah,
he definitely
sounds
is.
Like it.
But what?
Homeland Security operation supposedly.
And you know, the House could draw the strings on that purse shut.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Why isn't that happening? Yeah, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I think the House needs to get their hands dirty in this.
Well, that's another thing. Is Barr going to show up for a hearing next week?
Probably not. Jimmy in Seattle reminding us the little green goons hauled off a woman who was passing them flowers.
Holy shit.
And Portland Andy, who's done a lot of the video coverage, suggested using Hi-Li handles to lob the smoke grenades back at them.
Oh, that's a good idea.
They were using lacrosse sticks the other night.
Looked like some of them had hockey sticks last night.
Yeah, but the ones with the net on a long handle.
Yeah, I know what you're
talking
about.
For the lacrosse ball, they were using some of those not last night, but the night before, to pitch the canisters back over to the green goons.
So yeah, do you guys think at the rental car company?
Flavio says I heard it was Enterprise.
Do you think that anyone would be stupid enough to put their home address down there when they rented the car?
No, it's
no,
all,
but
it's
I'll bet if you dusted for fingerprints, you could run them through the FBI's fingerprint database and find out who they are.
Oh, that's a great idea.
If the FBI
then you have a bench warrant, and there you go.
Well, if the FBI would allow that,
they could go like repossess the cars at the motel they're staying at.
I believe it's not the Marriott
there
hotel
during the day. Yeah, that's what I heard.
Or just put the old Denver boot on.
Waterfront Marriott.
Marriott, okay.
And remember, the family.
There's now also a little bit of a push to start asking the Marriott whether or not the clothes they're wearing are being brought into the hotel, because in order to get the gas out, they have to hang outdoors for 48 hours before you're supposed to walk into an enclosed space. So that you don't contaminate the facility. And apparently that facility is also engaged in some sleep studies for people that are having sleep problems. And so they go to the hotel and then people observe them and blah, blah, blah. So are the people going through these sleep studies potentially having their sleep studies compromised by the fact of the residual pepper spray and tear gas that they're wearing while they re-enter the motel without having aired out their clothes? Or maybe they're taking showers in the courthouse. I don't know.
Well, there's nothing like pepper spray to facilitate the ability to sleep, huh, Roger?
Yeah, right. I've never tried it.
I don't think I want to.
The other wrinkle in all of that, of course, is the Marriott's. Marriott is still a family-owned concern. And they are hardcore right-wing Mormons, if I recall correctly. So they may be A-okay with all of this, but they would not like to have a worldwide boycott of Marriott.
They're big.
As to the unmarked officers, I have an anonymous note here. The goons are mostly, and this is someone who would have reason to know, the goons are mostly FPS, Federal Protective Service. They have all the same power to hold and cuff you, but usually they hand you off to local law enforcement. They're mainly contractors who are still in or freshly out of the military.
Huh. Yeah, they provide security at federal buildings, for example, Bob, because I used to talk to them all the time when I go into federal buildings when I was with the government. I still do when I go back, but they're contractors. I've talked to some of the guys there about, you know, how they get paid and stuff, and you know, they don't get paid very well. They get paid like an hourly rate of some sort, and then the company that contracts them out to FPS gets a whole lot more money, of course, you know. You mark the old markup
And I wonder if that's Eric Prince.
Probably, yeah. It sounds like it could be.
Well, who signs like that check? Because whoever signs that check needs to stop signing that check now.
Well,
we don't. Who is
easier
that?
Said than
that
done,
bar?
Chris? Huh? Easier said than done. We don't know much about these people, but again, they're they're irregulars. That's the best way to put it. You know.
There was a picture I saw with three or four uncovered faces and unhatted heads, and they look to be in their late 30s, early 40s, which is the prime just retired age for military.
Yeah, a lot of them that I talked to were military. Like I know I talked to one fellow who was with FPS who was I think he was even in the National Guard, and he returned from, I think, Afghanistan. He was due to go back for like another, you know, he was like re-upped or something like that. They took him out of reserve and were going to assign him back into the combat zone or whatever. So, yeah, those guys are military. A lot of them are.
And that brings up another question. Why not mobilize the National Guard?
I've heard that talked about before, Bob.
I mean, it's legal to do that in times of civil unrest. And if you mobilize the National Guard and designate that the people perpetrating the civil unrest are the goons, things get interesting.
Oh, right now. In other words, have Kate Brown call up the National Guard in essence to protect the protesters instead of using the Portland PD.
Right.
That would be interesting.
Again, that would have to take some dicey negotiation with the organizers of the protest to get the protesters to accept that the National Guard was there on their side and not on the side of the goons.
And the local police.
Well, that'd be simple. Just have them face the fence.
Yeah.
March them in. Locked and loaded. Use bullhorns. Explain, we're not here for y'all. And line them up along the fence. And point the damn guns at the goons and see how long they last.
Wow.
Well, unfortunately, I think it would start the civil war that the Bugaloo boys want, and Trump.
Well, that's the other side of that coin.
Serious game of chicken.
But what's the logical conclusion to all this? Does Trump want a civil war? I mean, what's his game plan? I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
He's doing this in an election year? I mean, he's going to lose more votes. I mean, he's just tanking right
now. No, he's doing it in election year, so there won't be an election.
Oh, okay, of course. Yeah. Call me naive on that one. Jeez. Why is he doing this?
Well, he'll steal the election. It's all right.
I mean, he'll do anything he can to try to maintain power because he knows he's going to jail most likely, or a good chance he's going to jail if
his lawyers have told him he's going to jail.
He doesn't win the re-election.
Well, if Ghislaine Maxwell talks, he's really going to go to jail. She's got a lot of crap on him, I bet. You know, there's an SDNY affidavit against Trump, which was removed because the victim was getting death threats. But it was a 14-year-old girl who was raped in Epstein's mansion in Upper East Side in New York. And the guy who did it was old Donnie. And nobody's talking about that in the main news. But you can download that file, a PDF file, and read it. But, you know, of course, it's not proven. Still, it's disturbing to know that our president is a rapist.
Yeah. Well, Bob has he talks about the four felonies that are obvious, that are ready to go the moment he's not in power anymore. And those are, ready to go.
Yeah, the two identical campaign finance violations that Cohen went down on and two counts of conspiracy.
Yep. That should be
because the conspiracy and the substantive crime do not merge. They're separate and distinct offenses.
So they can't be served concurrently then?
Oh, no, they could be. They could be.
Oh.
The sentence could be concurrent, but the charges are separate.
Right. Because each contains an element the other does not.
Well, Blago got, 14 years for his little snafu? So why not 10 for the orange asshole? That should be enough to put him in jail for the rest of his life.
Yeah, and especially since he wished her well.
Oh, yeah. Well wishes.
remember when Kaylee Maganinny, who got owned by a cartoon dog, and I'm not gendering here. We could say that Paw Patrol made her their bitch.
Oh, that's a good cowbell for you, Bob.
Oh, well, thank you.
Perfect.
Yeah, the charges, Rick knows more about the federal sentencing guidelines And I'd say that, well, I don't know. How would those play, Rick, do you think?
Which specific crimes here?
Well, it would be federal election criminal code.
Okay.
Illegal campaign contributions.
Yeah, those penalties, as I understand it, are usually fairly weak. The sentences usually aren't very great. Kind of like the way they treat gambling, illegal gambling.
But there's felony, okay. But there's felony conspiracy that goes with each count too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Cohen got, 3-4 years for what he did, his role in it.
Yeah, two counts.
Yeah, so I suppose, the guidelines are probably, the guidelines are almost always less than the statutory, they are less than the statutory maximum, that could be imposed, because those judges are cabined by whatever the maximum is. They can't sentence above that, but they can. They can go above the guidelines if they wish. The guidelines are, they're only advisory, so the judge has discretion to decide how they're going to sentence. But they give a pretty good idea as to what kind of sentence ought to be imposed anyway. I would say the range is probably 2 to 4 years, Bob, under the guidelines without actually studying it or looking at the guideline, We're not talking a whole lot of jail time.
Hey, Rick, well, what happens if they add on all the counts where the Republican National Committee and a couple other PACs have funneled, is it $4 million in the last 2 months to the Trump companies in various ways for consulting fees and a whole bunch of other crap that came out in the news a couple of days ago? Couldn't those get added on, and all of a sudden we've got 100 charges with 24 months per charge?
If there's a bunch of charges with just sentence recommendations of 2 to 4 years each, they will do what's called group them if there's various different charges under different titles of the U.S. Code, for example. Different kinds of crimes, they'll group them, and then generally you'll get an enhancement based on the grouping, but it's no more than another maybe a year or so over and above whatever the other charges are. So if you have a bunch of charges that has a sentence recommended guideline of, let's say, it's not as broad as 2 to 4 years, it's more of a, it's usually 12 to 18 months or something like that. So if they have the same, sentencing guideline, generally the sentences will run concurrently all at the same time for the various crimes rather than consecutively. And the grouping effect would maybe just give a slight increase in the overall sentence. But, just because you have 100 different crimes, if they all have the same penalty attached to them, the statutory maximum is obviously greater than, it's going to be the sum of all of the various crimes, but, the guidelines will not be anywhere near the statutory maximum. So, yeah, they could charge him with a ton of stuff, but, they got to charge him with something that has a high guideline sentence. Like, for example, tax evasion has a very high guideline. Unlike illegal gambling, for example, that has a low guideline. You hardly see people spending more than 6 months, maybe a year in jail for that. But if there's a tax charge involved, that can increase it to, you can get 10 years, 15 years for tax evasion. I mean, if there's enough counts of that you're convicted of.
Like the cop that killed George Floyd. Unless you folks haven't heard about his tax evasion.
I didn't know.
Yeah, him and his wife.
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
And I suspect she got charged, because she filed for divorce. Mm-hmm. She got, because when the divorce was initially filed, everybody said, well, that's fairly transparent. He's doing that so he can park all of his assets with her to protect him against the coming civil suit.
Yeah.
Well, now that she's been charged with tax evasion alongside him, that doesn't work anymore, does it, Rick?
No, certainly not. Not at least as to the feds. They're going to get their restitution. They're going to get their tax restitution from them. Does it work as to the Floyd family, a judgment by them against them? Probably not. That seems to be a fairly, fairly easy case. I mean, when you get divorced, I mean, it's, I shouldn't say easy, but, there's probably ways to characterize that as a fraudulent transfer and thereby, you know, prevent that scheme from working. You know, if especially if they can show the divorce is just a sham, you know?
Yeah.
If they did it just for financial reasons.
Well, I don't think the county jail's allowing conjugal visits. Not with him up on murder charges. But this was significant money. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
Which he must have gotten from his year tenure or so being a real estate agent somehow. Because cops don't make that much money.
He was a real estate agent for how long?
A short period of time.
Well, yeah, I'd be surprised you're going to make hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars over just a year as a real estate agent. Those guys,
it's depending on what real estate he was moving to.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, if he was selling Trump Tower floors to the Russians, he could have been making damn good money.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the money laundering, we haven't even touched on that.
Well, for some reason, I'm not surprised that guy is charged with tax evasion. I don't know why that is. I guess anybody who can act so savagely and kill somebody with their knee on someone's neck, you know, obviously doesn't have anything in the way of moral compunctions about anything, really.
Particularly somebody you know.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I still haven't found out much more about the connection between the officer and George Floyd, other than that they worked security at the same nightclub occasionally. I mean,
for a long period of time.
For a long period. Okay. Jeez.
We're talking years.
Some kind of animosity between the two, but I can't recall like specifically why.
Okay.
George Floyd had gotten upset with him on multiple occasions for the way he treated black customers, as opposed to white customers, for committing the same offense to get kicked out of the club.
Actually, those taxes, I believe, were state taxes, state of Minnesota. But I'm reading the article now, but believe it or not, I don't even think it's the IRS. I think it's Minnesota State. I think for a couple of years he didn't even bother to file tax returns. So I think that's worth.
Well, he probably also committed federal tax crimes as well if he's guilty of the state tax crime. So
for some reason, it's only like $30,000 total over 5 years. Huh. But having said that, I mean, they're out to hang him.
That generally wouldn't bring a federal prosecution. $30,000 over 5 or 6 years. Yeah. You need to have about maybe $100,000 over that period of time.
I wouldn't be surprised if they go after him. The Fed check things too. Like you said, this kind of guy is the type of guy who's going to put corners left, right, and center.
I think. Well, thanks for the information. That's helpful.
So I thought the total amount was in the hundreds. $465,000 is what I remembered, but I don't have the article in front of me.
There may be more, but the article I'm reading is saying about $300,000 he didn't declare, which would have resulted in $30,000. But you may be right. There may be more tax issues out there. I'm just reading.
I wasn't saying $400,000 owed. Yeah. I was saying a discrepancy in incomes of in the neighborhood of $400,000. Yeah. But your article says $300,000, so I'm not going to argue the point.
Yeah,
well,
right.
Let's say that let's just say it's $400,000, just round it off, that's going to result in a federal tax liability of about, roughly 30%, 33%, thereabouts. So
if he didn't,
we're talking some significant money there. I mean, it's not, it might be enough to draw a federal prosecution. We're talking, over $100,000 of tax evaded there.
I usually don't. Usually, when they hate someone like this, and I know, I'm sorry, I'm speaking layperson, simplistic terms, but when they've got a bad guy on the radar screen, I think they go after him tooth and nail. So
I think you're probably right, Lou. They do. There is that pile on effect, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've represented people in the past who've been piled on.
Right.
And you know, it's difficult to represent them, you know, because. You know, every time you try to satisfy one aspect, one question the government may have, they, you know, or one charge, they come after you with something else. So it's like whack-a-mole, you know?
Yep. But I kind of missed the earlier point. I forget who was raising it, but remember Al Capone? They arrested him on tax evasion. It's a mm-hmm. It's a classic way to make sure you can get something to stick.
Yeah.
So maybe this gets back to they're worried it's difficult to convict a cop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe they want to make sure they get him for something. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, that could be. That's a different state indictment, I assume.
Oh, it is.
Right? The tax charges. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Were the tax charges state taxes he failed to pay, or was that federal as well?
Well, what I'm reading in this article is saying it's the former it's the Washington County, Minnesota attorney Pete. Blah blah blah, said it's Minnesota Department of Revenue, and Oakdale is who leveled the charges. So I think it's Minnesota state taxes.
Okay, so basically what happens is that's a backstop. The
exactly
the state criminal tax charges are a backstop in case he walks on the murder charge
or gets too low
as to George Floyd.
And like you said, I think they'll probably go over his federal returns tooth and nail.
Oh, yeah. He'll get audited by the IRS. That'll draw an audit. Yeah.
Now, didn't Chauvin get new charges piled against him? I mean, the first charge was something like manslaughter, or is he being charged with murder? Or
Murder. Murder, too. Okay. And murder, too, will probably take in the lesser includeds of murder 3, manslaughter, voluntary, involuntary, however the Minnesota code is written.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They have to prove intent if he gets murder 1. So, but it seemed like eight minutes is kind of like intent.
you have to prove intent with murder 2, too. It's just a different kind of intent.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, prior intent is murder 1. Intent, I believe, is murder 2, but I'm not the lawyer.
Right. The most places define it as cold-blooded murder 1 versus hot-blooded murder 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
there's a possibility those charges could be upgraded to first-degree murder. That's what the Attorney General Ellison has stated. And that's where it becomes important, you know, his previous relationship with George Floyd, you know, the interactions they had, disagreements, fights. They're going to interview a bunch of people who maybe witnessed their interactions, you know, together.
And was Chauvin ever involved in the Klan or any white supremacist groups, or can they prove that he has
now that could that could
bias
that could go to enhance a bias enhancement possibly depending on Minnesota state law,
maybe a hate crime charge or something like that,
right?
And the other thing is and that's why I didn't understand the second degree charge. The Supreme Court has held in the past that premeditation required for first degree murder, premeditation can happen in the legalistic term is scintilla juris,
mm-hmm.
in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a split second before you commit the murder, you can premeditate it.
Right. Yep. But I mean, what being on, you know, having your knee on somebody's neck for like over 9 minutes or about 9 minutes. I mean, you know, you have plenty of time to think about what you're doing. You would think, especially when the guy's pleading for his life and, you know, saying he can't breathe and, you know, that kind of thing, you know?
Right.
So the argument would be that when he first put his knee there, it was just to subdue him. But the longer he had his knee there and the more he was enjoying listening to him beg,
mm-hmm.
the more he decided to keep it there to really teach the motherfucker a lesson.
Right. Right.
And then I said, oh, screw it. I'll just let him die. And that would shift it from 2 to 1?
Yeah, probably so, Roger. Yeah, probably so. I mean, at some point in time, the intent can shift to, you know, to intent to, you know, premeditate.
I'm just glad it wasn't me on the street side.
Jeez. Well.
Yeah, I often think about if I were in that situation or if I were watching something like that, a cop do something like that, what would I do? Would I grab that cop and pull him off George Floyd? Or, you know, and you never know because you're so
But remember,
shocked
that, but
by
remember,
that.
Remember, they operate, they the police is a mob. They're a gang.
Right. Right.
So if you go to pull one off, you're going to have two more on you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it would
have been a shift their attention to you instead of the guy that had this, you know, on the ground with the officer's knee on his neck. And then they're going to wail on you, basically. Four against one.
You might save the first guy's life, but you're going to lose your own.
Right.
Well, I think Antifa needs a RoboCop, like, you know, just go in back. There, eh? For the underdog.
Well, perhaps they can raise the funds for that from their membership dues, you know?
Yeah, that Antifa, they're so organized.
It's
Got a secret handshake and a decoder ring. And yeah.
I'm still trying to find the address to send my membership to.
Yeah. And I really want to get some really sharp clothes. I want to get a little green beret and insignia. Insignia.
Jeez. Yeah, speaking of that whole Antifa thing, I know that was a big thing on Fox that the, you know, Antifa had taken over Portland and, you know, Seattle and all this nonsense. But I think some of these people, some Americans really believe that shit, you know, unfortunately.
Oh, God, yes, they do.
Long enough,
I mean, look at, there was a terrible event in some crappy little small town in Ohio where a couple of women went out to do a Black Lives Matter stand. I mean, it was barely a march, but by the time they did it, word had gone like wildfire around the town that our precious little town is about to be invaded by the Antifa. And so so the collective Cleti came out with their freedom protectors and just destroyed whatever sense of cohesion there was in the town. And it was so bad. The Washington Post or the New York Times wrote a lengthy article about it, and the town just hates each other now. And it happened all. I mean, there was a period of time where you had the maggots showing up with their guns to stop the Antifa. You might recall a few weeks back, a month back, we had a note from our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown that talked about that happening in a little town in the Northwest where the locals assaulted. A mixed race family who I guess had maybe, if I recall the details correctly, they had converted an old school bus into a camper and were coming into town, and all the good God fearing upstanding Bible believing Christ centered evangelical fundamentalist homosexual Christian white folks were waiting for them with semi-automatic weapons.
If my mind is not totally failing me, I believe that was Grants Pass, Oregon.
Yes, you're right, Roger. You're right. Oh, and I just had a note from Rico in DeBerg. We got $285 to finish the week. And Rico said, I want to put up a $37 challenge in memory of Michael Brooks, the 37 for the years he was on this earth. He was a great and true progressive who I didn't always agree with, but he was passionate, well-informed about everything he talked about and did everything with superb humor and a sense of peace and justice that just exuded from every pore he had. He will be missed. Peace to you and the Horn community. Your buddy, Rico, in the Berg. So,
Rico, I got a correction. That wasn't Grants Pass. That was Klamath Falls.
Okay. They're close.
Nah.
Southern Oregon, which is pretty right-wing.
I seem to recall. No, I don't think it was Paul. It was Mike in Cascadia who brought that up. Mentioning because he talked about how it had all been timbered out, and I'll have to go back and see if I can find it.
I mean, I'll accept Sparky's Klamath Falls number. That's.
Oh, I remember the news article. It was.
Yeah, but it's still Southern Oregon, which is
Cowgirl posted on Facebook or something.
Maggot country to the max down there.
Oh yeah,
Medford, Jacksonville area as well.
All that Eastern Oregon down into California area there, Tule Lake.
There's actually a part of Eastern Oregon where they want to succeed from Oregon and be part of Idaho. When I heard about that, I said, "Oh, go for it!" You know,
they don't want to become part of the state of Jefferson.
No. The state of Jefferson is. Basically, I-5 West and Humboldt, Del Norte, Trinity, Siskiyou, Coos, Josephine, is it? Mm-hmm. Anyhow, there's about three southern Oregon counties and four or so northern California counties that were the original idea of the state of Jefferson.
It's my county because they got a big sign on I-5 as you come north. It's welcome to the state of Jefferson.
Oh, really? Oh, that's nuts.
Well, but now, in order to understand the state of Jefferson...
Come into Tehama County.
Yeah, all right. But if you need... When you want to understand the state of Jefferson, you have to realize that this was a movement that was generated just prior to World War II, when Northern California was, particularly on the coast, was feeling very isolated from the state capital in Sacramento. And Southern Oregon was feeling very isolated from the state capital up in Salem. And it was, we are so far removed from our respective state capitals, and we've got nothing to do with really what's going on in those urban areas, and we're a totally rural environment, and we should be able to have a rural state that deals with our rural problems. And then it all got put on hold when Pearl Harbor happened, because now we're one country and we need to all work together. And it only got really revived in the late 60s the John Birch Society conservative movement, when the Southern Oregon and Northern California felt that they were being liberalized by the urban areas, and the transportation issues were no longer the big thing. It was simply political. And in case of Northern California, particularly on the coastal side, is we pay all these road use taxes and we don't get any goddamn roads. And all they're doing is building fucking freeways in LA and San Francisco and Sacramento. And we're still having to put new shock absorbers on our car twice a year because of all the fucking potholes. So there's a whole lot.
I-5 pretty good.
Yeah, but I-5 did not exist in 1940.
No, but I mean now.
Yeah, it was Highway 99. Yeah,
now right. The whole thing is that they cry because all the Democratic people of the Bay Area and Southern California rule the assembly in the state house.
Yeah, that argument still exists. But
that's
back in the 30s.
That's what crybabying about now.
Yeah, but back in the 30s, particularly over on the coast, it was not uncommon for people in the Eureka Crescent City area to not get any deliveries from anywhere for maybe a month at a time in the winter because the roads were all closed. That's when grocery stores still had the back warehouse with 2 or 3 weeks supply of shelf stock. I mean, mostly canned goods. I mean, you lost your dairy. Well, actually, you didn't lose your dairy because all the local areas had dairies and they were locally bottled milk and that kind of stuff. But anyhow, a lot of it had to do with roads and that kind of stuff on the resurgence of the state of Jefferson.
All I know is I see people cruising around with them double X stickers on their trucks.
Okay, I got a change of shifting gears here. Everybody think that Judge Thomas, if Trump does not win re-election, will resign from the court to allow Trump to appoint a young justice of a conservative bent?
I have seen that. I've seen that bounced about a bit.
I would assume that would be the case.
I'm sure they'll pressure him. Especially if they lose control of the Senate.
How old is he? Anyone know? I could look it up.
Oh, and I conjured Mike in Cascadia. Antifa is coming. Antifa is coming to Forks, Washington. That's where it was.
Forks, there were several Washington. Places.
Yeah,
Jesus,
it did.
Where
it
the hell is Forks, Washington?
It is.
It's in the Olympic Peninsula, right, Bob?
Oh, it's
Olympic Peninsula.
Yeah.
My sister's up there this for the week. Yeah.
That's
it's
the nicest part of Washington State is that area.
Yeah, it's on the way to the Olympic Peninsula. Mm-hmm. So, thank you, Mike, for that, because.
On Highway 101. Hmm. 56 miles from Victoria, BC, by the ferry.
Huh.
Yeah. It goes all the way down to San Diego, right by Scott's house, I assume.
And that whole kerfuffle was ginned up by a Facebook message from Fred's Guns in nearby Squim, Washington.
Squim.
Yeah, Sequim, pronounced Squim. And I think I'm squirreling up some of the details. But
oh, this one has a nice lavender patch. And field marshmallows that aren't yet wrapped in white.
Hey, Bob, did you say Squim? Wasn't that Kavanaugh's buddy? What was his name?
Squee. Squee. That's Squee. PJ and Squee.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
And again, like I said, as we enter the third hour of the program, we got $285 to go, and there's a $37 challenge on the table, courtesy of Rico and the Berg. In memory of Michael Brooks. So, I know a lot of people were shocked and saddened by his passing, and it awful, just awful.
So I posted a link in the Skype chat about the Klamath Falls deal.
Yeah. Steven New York says, "Have a great weekend, everybody. I'm going to log off and listen to the Reds game." Understandable.
Cubbies are on, Rick.
Oh, and Dave number 11 in Humboldt said, "No monument, signs everywhere." Sparky's talking of the 2020 Jefferson, Rogers flying an older flag. Yeah, two different kinds of situations. Hey, thanks to Irwin for jumping in on that challenge. Much obliged, Irwin. There's $32 left in that challenge. Thank you. Let's see here.
Good one, Sparky. In Klamath Falls, Oregon, victory declared over Antifa, which never showed up.
Yeah, that was generally the case. I mean, it happened. These things happened all across the country, and it seemed fairly obvious that it was being ginned up by, you know, right-wing provocateurs.
Oh, it must have been TikTok. Those goddamn teenagers, you never know what they're going to pull off next. Yes, my cheek is pooched out from my tongue.
Yes.
Now, I read that Trump's Tulsa rally cost the campaign over $4 million, and they had this. So he keeps bleeding money, and he keeps losing poll numbers. So I think what we're seeing really is his reacting to his own demise. He can't do anything about it. He's flailing.
Well, is that why he canceled Jacksonville? Because it was going to cost too much money?
Well, I think he got pressured because the head of the police department or security or Homeland Security down there said, "Hey, we can't do this. It can be done." And Florida's got the highest numbers right now. They're like third behind New York State with deaths and COVID positive cases. There are like 350,000 people who are positive in Florida. I heard somewhere that 30% of one town's population is testing positive. I don't know which town it was. Was it Tampa?
I believe that's one of the counties in Southern Miami-Dade kind of number.
That's
where
right.
They're getting a 30% positive test rate. And in order to open up, the old CDC guidelines were a 1.5% test rate positive.
Old Ron got heckled at a press conference, and you know, you don't see that happening that much, but that guy who heckled him was really brave. And he just stood there and looked at him.
I would have thrown a shoe at him.
Speaker's muted.
Did you hear about the Buffalo Blue Jays?
Oh, they're playing in Buffalo.
Yes.
Yeah, because they can't play in Toronto.
Right. They're going to have to change their logo. I never thought of a Buffalo as being able to fly. Bob, I heard that cowbell almost ring.
Yeah, get a little tiny cowbell.
Yeah.
World's tiniest cow.
He must have lost the cowbell.
He was thinking about it. I heard like the beginning of a tinkle of a cowbell. Oh, jeez. I guess that's the prequel.
Premature cowbell, Bob.
That's a very sad cowbell. That's a depressed cowbell.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the first extra innings game and that new rule they're going to have. That's wonderful, huh? To start a guy on second?
Oh, that's dumber than a head and a hog is in the ass.
It's so stupid.
Are they
going to
bring a tee out? Yeah, tee?
Just start calling tie games. What the hell? Just say, okay, it's a tie. We're not going to do extra innings. That's actually more fulfilling than giving somebody an advantage by putting a guy on second, you know?
I think extra innings, they ought to, never mind the guy on second, they ought to have to pitch underhanded.
Well, there you go. I mean, is that gonna make, I guess they don't want the long, like, you know, 24 inning games or, you know, that kind of thing, because maybe that's going to make the players more susceptible to COVID. I mean, I don't know. That's the theory, I think, Bob. But
yeah, I know. But putting the guy on second base next to the second baseman,
yeah,
is more exposure than starting with the empty bases. Isn't
it? That's true. Well, what they could do, what would have been a better idea is to limit extra innings. Let's say three extra innings. Okay, like we're going to play till the 12th inning. If nobody scored at the end of 12 innings, then it's a tie. That makes more sense. Don't you think so, Bob?
It does.
If that's their concern. But yeah, there's going to be more exposure. I wouldn't want to be a second baseman in the major leagues anymore.
No.
Remember when we played as kids and you didn't have enough people? You weren't allowed, like, the foul line was straight down center field. Maybe they'll need to do that for extra innings.
Yeah, you'd only be able to have like
the more I think about it, the more this more crazy this seems, because since you've deliberately put a guy in scoring position, that means the second baseman is going to have to play him tight for pickoff work.
Right. Right. Sure.
What happens if you pick off? What happens if you pick off the free? If you pick off the free base runner, the designated base runner, do you get another one? Do they just put the guy back on fucking second?
Probably not, Bob.
I mean, it's stupid.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the Trey Parker, Matt Stone movie, Basketball, that came out in the late 90s? They're the guys that did South Park. It's really hilarious. You got to watch it, Bob. You know, if
Basketball. Yeah, I saw that somewhere back in the day.
I was on the floor watching that.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that one. That sounds like it's worth watching. I always enjoyed the Major League movies. That was fun. You know, Major League 1 and 2.
Well, what was that one about the guy who was doing numbers? I forget. That came out a few years ago. He figured out how to get a winning team for the A's, and he was like a talent scout.
Oh, that Moneyball.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
Yeah.
And he had some success, but then the numbers didn't quite work out for him later on.
Yeah, I mean,
they did that one year.
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting thing is the A's have had some really good players, and they've had some really good teams, but they always, like, sell it off whenever they get good, you know? I don't know what the deal is, if it's because it's not considered a major market or what the deal is.
Yeah, small payroll.
Yeah.
Hey, Rick, are they still doing the Iowa game, Rick?
Iowa football, they're not doing
No, I mean the Field of Dreams game in Iowa, the baseball game.
I doubt it. That was supposed to have occurred, I think, this month in Iowa between the Yankees and the White Sox. I'm sure that's a casualty of COVID, among other things. I mean, geez, that's like that's a very minor casualty, you know.
Well, I know, yeah.
But no, that was a game I was thinking of going to see, but obviously.
Me too.
I'm not traveling anywhere with this COVID shit. I'm not even, even if there's outdoor restaurants, I'm not going to dine at an outdoor restaurant. So Star wants to go out, she can go by herself. I'll get takeout for her, but I'm not going to like go to a restaurant and pretend that things are normal again, you know, because they're not. Her neighbor is still alive though. COVID idiot Pete somehow.
Oh, he lived through it?
He survived apparently. Yeah.
He's still throwing those damn parties?
Yeah, he's starting. Once the fourth rolled around, he started partying again. Once the 14-day period ended,
God almighty.
I know.
He'd be a perfect person for the CDC to monitor, see how many times he can get it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the research I've heard of, I've heard about as far as the ability to get it again. Like, the antibodies, I guess, are weakest in people who only got a touch of it, who didn't have it really bad. But those who got it really bad have more antibodies, and they last longer, apparently. So maybe if you get a touch of it, you know, that doesn't give you immunity, let's say, if you get exposed again a few months later or something. I'm not really sure, you know, how that works. But this is a really freaking mysterious disease, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
It attacks every body system, you know?
And it attacks everybody differently.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And it's not just pulmonary. It's also cardiovascular. It attacks organs.
Right.
It breaks up fats, causes minor strokes. It's crazy, man. This thing is so scary. And you got these idiots running around, you know, I don't want to wear a mask, you know. And then they wind up dying.
And I have... I have museum quality stupid. I got along those lines. And by the way, thanks going out to Libby. Ronan's challenge in memory of Michael Brooks is down to $22. Thank you. Thank you, Libby. Joining in with Irwin on that. So hopefully $22 more will roll in, and that'll get us down to, that'll get us down to 211 to go to finish the week. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Rico, again for the challenge, and thank you. Thank you to Libby for and Irwin for answering it. Now, I said I've got a master class in stupid, mask hole COVIDiot. Idaho. Yeah, of course, because the Southwest District Board of Health gathered for a hearing on a resolution that merely recommended but didn't require the wearing of masks. Well, the mask hole COVIDiot showed up in force, and every time somebody spoke in favor of wearing a mask, they grunted and shrieked and squealed. One member of the board, a guy by the name of Tom Dale, got booed because he said he thought that they should deploy contact tracing to keep track of hotspots. And then he said, well, you know, I went to a party recently, and everybody there wore masks, and it wasn't a problem. And they grunted and shrieked and howled again. And he said it was a private party. It was their right to do that. Don't denigrate them for doing that. And the grunting and the hooting continued. And one board member said, the pace of the disease, the spread of the disease slowed in New York after they shut businesses down and employed social distancing. And I mean, I can just hear them. Quit talking smart things. You can't make us wear masks. And after they voted to approve the mask recommendation, somebody in the group, a bunch of people in the group hollered, I hope you all get voted out. And it would have been nice if one of the smart people said, well, you know, there's always a possibility of that. But equally, there's a possibility you won't be here to vote us out because you're going to be fucking dead because you're fucking morons.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, Bob, I think they need to update the urine-colored snake flag and put, like, a mask with a cross through it. Like, no mask.
The best urine-colored snake flag I've seen lately is the one that's a coiled ventilator hose.
Oh.
Hey, I've heard several reports from Germany and so forth that they're thinking COVID is really a vascular disease. And that's why for some people it hits the lungs, other people it hits other areas, the lungs having lots of vascularity, but other parts of your body do.
And Darlene in Connecticut just wrote in too and said it also has adverse neurological effects.
Yeah, but it gets to your brain that way, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. It does cause brain damage.
Through the basket.
Sailor
wrote something too.
In the regular chat, and I cross posted it over to the Skype chat. And for people that aren't on the chat, this is from Sailor Chick. Yeah, it's actually a disease that inflames the epithelial cells, which are found lining every blood vessel. Your lungs have a lot of those, which is why it primarily attacks the lungs, but can attack other parts of the body. And then she goes on, hospitals are actually bolus dosing vitamin D as part of their COVID protocol for admitted patients. D is an immunomodulator, whatever that is. The VA's got me dosing up my vitamin D because, well, most of us are deficient to try to hide from the sunshine.
Yes, my doctor suggested make sure I'm taking vitamin D, but also certain blood types do better. I'm O negative, and I hear that I have a better chance of surviving if I get COVID.
Yeah, O is
better, whether it be negative or positive.
Yeah, O handles it better than A or B or AB.
Yeah, I've got the worst type. I've got A+, I think, is my blood type.
That's me too.
Well, yeah. Nice knowing you guys.
E3.
Stay safe. Uh-oh.
Yeah. My son has O, I think. My son has O, so he's better that way.
Well, hey, I can make things ickier still if you'd like. I mean, now that we're moving into...
I've already had my lunch, Bob, so that's okay.
Yeah, I'm
been consumed.
Well, this is fitting that I'm going to ruin dinner in the mountain time zone because this is a story coming out of Colorado. In Colorado, they have discovered that there is an outbreak of a different disease in the Denver area. It's something that goes back to World War I, and it's called trench fever. It is transmitted by body lice. Yuck.
Really?
They've identified, as of this story, they've identified 4 cases. The symptoms of trench fever are relapsing fever, bone pain, particularly in the shins, headache, nausea, vomiting, and malaise. Also possibly skin lesions and life-threatening infection of the heart valves.
Jeez.
Wow. And it's caused...
I wonder if bed bugs could pass that on.
I don't know. It says it's spread by body lice. The condition is caused by the bacterium Bartonella quintana, which is kissing cousins, which is a gross way to put it, with the bug that causes cat scratch fever.
Don't sing, Bob.
Na-na-na-na.
Are you talking crotch crickets?
Oh, God.
Body lice. I mean, crotch crickets.
Well, that
gets a cowbell.
The cat scratch fever was something that was dreaded by AIDS victims back in the 80s. I mean, remember.
I didn't even know that thing was a real thing. I thought that was just a stupid song.
Well, here's the thing. The bacteria lives in colonies in the digestive systems of body lice. And those bacteria are excreted in body lice poop.
Oh, lovely.
And so it enters through a scratch in the skin or through the eyes or nose. And hey, because 2020, dried lice feces can remain infectious for up to 12 months.
Jeez.
Oh, man.
So how in the hell has this gotten legs in Colorado? Anybody?
Well, they're still trying to sort out how, because they can't find commonalities among the 4 people who have had it diagnosed. Except for the fact that the four cases have been homeless in the Denver area.
Oh, God. Okay.
And there are
afraid. You know, same porta potty somewhere.
This is a case
for good hygiene, I guess.
Well, yeah, and they're afraid that they may have missed other cases because it's easy to misdiagnose.
Is this a fatal condition, Bob?
Inflammation of heart valves.
Trench fever. Okay.
And it's even made harder. It's made even harder to diagnose because it takes up to 21 days. To culture the bacteria in a petri dish.
Oh, man.
Boy. I'm still hoping for that asteroid, Bob. It's 2020 after all, you know? Yeah. Maybe that'll put us out of our misery here.
I saw a really funny bumper sticker that says, hey, let's get it on. We need an asteroid now. Might as well get it. Something to that effect. I laughed my ass off looking at that. The other one that I saw was 2020 sucks. which is pretty appropriate.
I'm kind of worried that terrorists are going to pick up on this little problem with infectious diseases like this and start developing some nasty bugs.
Well, the Japanese did that. The Chinese, they dropped bubonic plague on the peasants from the air.
Doesn't take too much imagination on the part of Ike to come up with this stuff.
You say you're afraid terrorists will. Terrorists already have. They're called maggots. They have names like Kemp. The terrorists have names like Kemp and DeSantis and Abbott and Governor Meemaw and McGovernor and McConnell and Trump. The terrorists already have.
And Maganini.
So is the Missouri, who's the Missouri governor?
Parson. He's been in the news. Governor Parson.
Yeah, he's a total idiot, just listening to him.
Yeah, the children will just get it and they'll go home. They'll be fine.
You know, we've looked at the terrorists, and the terrorists are us. That's what I conclude. The enemy is from within.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. We studied dropping fleas, infected fleas, during WW1 via airplane. I mean, it's nothing new.
Hey, Skeeve!
Hey. Bob! What's going on, brother?
How are you this evening, my friend?
Been one hell of a day, man, but I'm still standing.
You know,
good to see you, Steve.
Some days that constitutes a win.
Steve. All right, I think I will.
On the porch.
Yeah. Hey, Bob.
Little chair.
Yeah.
It's me. I and you're going to understand this. Maybe nobody else will. I started listening/watching the game. It's going to take me a while to get used to no Marty Brenneman.
Yeah, imagine so.
It just doesn't sound right.
Which game?
Reds game. Who'd they replace him with, Steve?
I don't know. I mean, I like they have Jeff Brantley, who was like Marty's sidekick, who I actually liked. He had a very Joe Nuxall feel to him. But, I grew up with that. You know that, you know.
If it's any consolation, and it's not, the same thing happens with me with Mountaineer football. And Jack Fleming has been gone for decades now. But, you know, for 50 years, he was the voice of the Mountaineers.
It doesn't seem.
And you know, he was also the radio voice of the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd listen to him do you'd listen to him call the Mountaineer game on Saturday, and then he'd go and you'd call the Steelers game on Sunday. And he had a magnificent voice and a great style. And in the case of the Mountaineers, they replaced him with this guy who's a right wing, just a total right winger that does like a sports call in show, and he's abominable. Yeah, he's awful. Named Tony Caridi. And I had a buddy who referred to him, and I think still does, as Tony Baglick. He's just and so there are old clips of Jack Fleming out there, and I still hear him. You know, Mountaineer games on the radio still don't sound right.
I get it. And Marty apparently handpicked this guy too, but it just.
Steve, you know, Tom isn't doing the games.
He does TV. Tom, I get it. No, it just ain't the same.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not the same. Plus, Tom is a little bit too like Pollyanna. Oh, isn't this just fucking great? And I just, Marty was very much, he didn't sugarcoat stuff. Yeah, so I'm watching it now and the stadium's empty. It's just.
That's got to be the weirdest part.
They just pan back. They had a view from the outfield. And you can see everything.
Do they have the cardboard fans?
No, no cardboard fans. Yes,
cardboard fans. Yeah.
You know what I think? I was watching the Nats last night, and I swear to God, they had piped in applause the stadium.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. They're experimenting with that.
What's the purpose?
Jack the players up.
I agree, though. It's
okay. I understand. I think Roger's kind of hit on something there. I think that's probably why. But, yeah. You know, let me ask a question of everybody. Who actually thinks they'll complete the season?
If the disease takes off, all bets are off.
Now, I frankly don't think they are. I don't think they will.
Otherwise, money's involved, remember, so that's a pretty big motivator in America.
What they may have to do, if it does start to get legs and players start to actually get sick and teams are starting to be affected by the players being out from the COVID, they're going to start to sequester the teams in hotels, I bet, just to keep them away from the general public. That's my prediction.
Well, I mean, another thing, too, is that I don't know if you saw, this is 60 games in 67 days.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a freaking brutal schedule. Which
isn't that pretty typical of the number of games they play this time of year normally? No,
Rick, that's only two. That's basically almost 30 games per month. They usually at least get one or two days per week off.
Yeah, because especially because of travel.
Travel. Or whatever.
There'll be less of that, though, because the competition is limited to competition within the division, I thought, at least.
There is interleague play because the Reds are playing the Tigers.
Well, yeah, I guess the Yankees played the Nationals yesterday.
And the Braves play the Red Sox.
Okay.
That's because they're playing Eastern teams are playing the Eastern teams, and Western teams are playing Western teams for the
entire. Maybe that's what they're doing. I guess, yeah. Maybe that's what they're doing.
The whole season, as I understand it.
Yeah, limit the cross country flights, that type of thing.
Hey, I thought Steve, you made reminding me to bring or calling Jack Fleming to mind for me. Just to, if you never heard him, I just looked something. I looked up a little clip of him, and this is. 1984. Doug Flutie came with Boston College down to Morgantown, and in all of his career at Boston College, Doug Flutie never beat West Virginia, never. And so this is a moment from that game, and this is the glory that was Jack Fleming. Play, damn it. There it is.
Here's Flutie being chased thereafter. Did they get him? They got him! They got him back at the 27-yard line! They got him! That was Matt Smith, the linebacker. They got Flutie! They got him that time! All afternoon they've been chasing him. All afternoon they pursued him. And they got him at the 26.5-yard line, the first sack of the ball game. Only the sixth sack of the season against Doug.
First and goal, ball right on the five.
They give us to Gay. Gay breaks a tackle behind the line of scrimmage. Rips it up. In the line of scrimmage, it goes in for a touchdown. I lost my microphone on that one. John Gay broke a tackle behind the line of scrimmage, heading off to the left, broke another tackle at the line of scrimmage. He galloped into the end zone.
Oh, God, those were the days. I was in the stands.
Bob, that... That voice just screams college football. At least it does to me.
Yeah. But he was hell on wheels with the Steelers too. Any Steelers fan will tell you that. Mm-hmm. And it was hilarious because he had a guy named Woody O'Hara was his color man at WVU. And then of course any Pittsburgher knows who his color man was for Steelers games. Myron Cope. Myron Cope had that voice. I think Gilbert Gottfried stole his voice shtick from Myron Cope. Myron invented the terrible towel. But in both instances, Jack did not brook idiots well. And they were kind of clowny. And on different occasions, I heard Jack Fleming say, "Shut up, Woody," on the air. And I also heard, "Shut up, Myron." And can you imagine that happening today? No. But yeah, he had a world class voice.
As soon as you played, and I've never heard him before, but as soon as I heard him, I'm like, ah, football voice.
He got him. Yeah.
And you know, I will say this in terms of football, and this is definitely an Ohio thing. Pro football has never been as big in Ohio, particularly in more in south of Columbus, as college football was. Because the Bengals never, I mean, they had some good years, but there's not that long tradition. And as Browns fans kind of died out, and at least south of Columbus, it's just not. You know, I don't have that. I find, and it could be that just the way NFL has kind of evolved is I just don't find it. I find it little more than professional wrestling.
You know, it's odd you'd say that because I feel the same way. It's become so stylized that
I was going to say predictable.
Yeah, I think the college game is a more important game.
It's more fun.
Yeah.
Tailgating. I mean, think of all that. You know, particularly the shit I've heard in the SEC, particularly Ole Miss, which people tell me Ole Miss is that tailgating there. Or it's not. It's called something else. Is something, frankly, to see. That Ole Miss, if I'm not mistaken, Ole Miss,
LSU, a tailgated LSU, is amazing. Just because you're getting that good Louisiana cooking, and sure. Everybody's got a different recipe. It's hell, tailgating at WVU is a blast. And it's gonna be, I'm trying to be a grown up about it. And I'm certainly not going to be a COVIDiot about it. But I'm gonna miss it. And it drives me crazy. I've mentioned it a couple of times. It drives me crazy that we've had 28. The Mountaineers have had 28 players test positive for COVID. 28 players. And Morgantown is the hottest place in the state in terms of the disease. And you don't have your players locked down.
You know what I said this last I was listening to the program last Friday where I was just why I'm still at a fucking loss. I am at a loss as to.
I know.
Do they honestly really think that this is all some big excuse? But see,
Steve,
worldwide hoax.
Were you listening last night? I'm not putting you on the spot.
No, I did
because
for a while.
Because I think I mean I
worked really late.
I think I had that we there was a moment last night because that one story I had the op-ed written by the special ed teacher in Oklahoma who bragged about how she'd voted for voted for every Republican since Carter, but by God, now that it may get her, she's concerned.
What is it about? I don't. It's not Republicans. There's something about conservatism.
It's not even conservatism. It is authoritarianism.
But what I'm saying, the notion that empathy doesn't even enter the mind until it happens to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't met anybody. But you see, I don't get it.
And have you? Well, you got off of Facebook, and I understand why. But I have any on my feed. I keep seeing people. I don't necessarily know them. They just reached out because they heard about the program or whatever. And so I accepted their friend request, and they're supposedly progressives, and I keep seeing posts, do you know anybody who's had it? Do you know anybody who's died? And, you know, the purpose being, you know, to somehow prove that, no, nobody really knows. Yeah, nobody really knows anybody that's had it or anything.
My grandma.
I actually
my grandma
do now.
Chicago.
I do.
Damn it.
Yeah.
You may tell you, I'll tell you, and this is probably something that you all have heard of. There was a guy here in New York. You can Google it. I didn't even know this until later on. He's a rookie firefighter, and his daughter got it. She was only 4 or 5 months old, got it and died from it. You know, Google, I knew the guy because he was a bartender at a bar I used to go to way when I lived in the Bronx. And I keep in touch with some of those folks. And they said, oh, yeah, and I had no idea. And I Googled it, and I'm like, oh, shit. And it was all over the news, all over everywhere.
Yeah.
But again, when someone says that.
Here's one for you from Variety. Darlene in Connecticut just sent this in. Mel Gibson hospitalized for coronavirus last spring. He had it in April, coming down with a case severe enough to require him to be hospitalized. He's the latest celebrity to go public with a positive diagnosis, on a list including Idris Elba, Tom Hanks, Rita Wilson, Pink, Daniel Day-Kim, and Darlene adds, how come I'm thinking this couldn't happen to a nicer person?
Jim Ward got it in February, and he still is not back to
business. Oh, yeah, I heard that today.
Yeah, he's been on a ventilator twice, nearly died, and he still is not back to baseline. Here it is going on August.
Who's
got
that?
February. Jim Ward, he's a voiceover guy. He did a lot of voiceovers for a lot of games, of Resident Evil. He worked for Stephanie Miller for a while. He's very talented.
Okay.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I can just imagine Mel Gibson in the hospital. It was the Jews! Yeah.
One skill I wish I had was being able to identify more quickly people who don't have a lot of empathy for other people, just to avoid them. But it's so hard for me to pick them out until you get burned.
But sociopaths, that's a sociopath. And sociopaths are very good at blending in. They're very good at manipulating. So you don't, I mean, that's
I can tell you. I mean, I've been burned, so. Whatever. I wish I had somehow could pick them out more quickly. Bob, I sent you some videos on West Virginia, and you made a comment about the type of journalism involved, and I didn't fully understand what you were saying. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit?
Wait a second. Who is this?
Sure. This is Lou. I'm sorry.
Oh, hey,
this
Lou. I don't remember what it was I said.
I'll go back and dig out the tweet. There's something about that type of journalism, but I'll look it up. It was about some counties in West Virginia, and they're talking to Trump voters and why they voted for Trump. And blah,
oh,
blah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. What I was talking about is the fact that coming to West Virginia and talking to Trump voters was an actual subgenre of bad journalism.
Okay, you were implying that, yeah. And why? Go ahead. Can you elaborate?
Well, because
there's a lot of them out there. I stumbled
right,
across
for, it. Right. We were a cottage industry for a while, Lou. Let's go to West Virginia and talk to that hardworking Appalachian white Trump voter.
And?
Because, you know, in the immediate aftermath of 2016, this trope emerged.
Yes. Okay.
That said, what was the term? Steve in New York will remember it. Any of the group may remember it.
It's like flying in and flying out.
That's parachute journalism, but.
But there's another word that you came up with.
What was it? Because it was so infuriating. I remember we had a bad journalism story a day for months.
It wasn't drive-by, was it?
No. It wasn't describing the journalism. It was what they And it was all over the country. It was how they described these Trump voters.
Well, I mean, you were a journalist, so I'm just trying to, because you have more insight into what's going on. I mean, I take it at face value. So.
Well, the whole thing was a false narrative.
Because
people here were being painted with a broad brush. I mean, let's put it this way. They never came to West Virginia to talk to somebody who didn't vote for Trump.
Okay.
To talk to somebody who despised Trump. They came here to bolster the idea that there was some sort of poor white trash monolith that explained Trump's popularity.
Well, I mean, I took it as being just part of the population, only because I knew some Bernie voters who live in West Virginia. But okay, I'm just trying to understand.
Well, I mean, I was a Bernie voter in the 2016 primary, but I did what you do. I mean, I behaved like an intelligent member of the electorate. I voted for my party's nominee in November. And I didn't.
I'm just trying to understand why you were so critical of it. And that's.
You caught me unawares, Luke. There's a term, and I can't remember it right now. For. Oh, what was it? This is driving me nuts.
Well, I think implied behind the effort to do that, they're saying, why the heck would these people vote against their own self-interest? So they're trying to figure out why they're voting in a way that.
Right. And that's something that I've addressed in the past, too. There's a bit there's a bit of elitism.
Yeah, of course there is.
In saying, you know, why are these people voting against their own self-interest?
Right. I know.
It's not that they're not. That means that whoever's asking that question is defining what should be their self-interest.
Yes.
But we're talking, Lou, about people who are warned weekly from the pulpit that if they vote for a Democrat, their immortal soul is in jeopardy because fetuses.
Yeah.
Okay? Their self-interest is not our self-interest.
Right.
The things that we define as enlightened self-interest, they don't.
Right. Yeah, I don't go to those churches, so I don't know. So I'm not aware of how much of an influence those things have. I do have a cousin like that, though. So you're right.
It's like James in Illinois says, progressive deniers. That's my brother. It's the people who said that Russia was a hoax. It's anti-Hillary. My brother gets sucked in on every conspiracy theory that he believes people like Jimmy Dore, who keeps talking about third parties, because they don't understand how parties work or math.
I mean, the way I took it was that they were so fed up of being led down by the Democrats, they were so desperate, they were willing to try anything. That's how I took it.
But that doesn't work, especially in the case of West Virginia.
Okay, as you said, that's not
in the West Virginia primary of 2008, was it? No, 2012. In the West Virginia primary of 2012, a guy who registered to run filed to run for president who was sitting in a Texas prison.
Jeez.
Drew lots of Democratic votes from people who just couldn't bring themselves to vote for Barack Obama. In 2008, in May, a West Virginia Democrat who had been voting Democrat all her life was interviewed at the primary, and she said, "Well, I voted for Hillary because I don't think I just don't think America's ready for one of those in the presidency." And so it's like the people who parachuted in here had no idea who they were talking to.
There you go. Again, they did not focus on the church, if the church plays that big a role. So you're certainly right about that.
And I mean, at one point in time, by one metric, and I've never forgotten this, West Virginia was the most racist state in the Union, because during a certain period of time, looking at Google searches, more West Virginians looked up that word and Barack Obama than any other state in the Union. And that speaks boatloads. And then, you know, there's the Hillbilly Elegy effect, that obnoxious book.
What's that?
I can't remember the guy's name who wrote it, but it made a fortune for him. Ron Howard bought the movie rights and struck a deal with Netflix to turn it into a film. And it's all about his hard knocks life growing up, not even in Appalachia per se, but somewhere in Ohio, and how, you know, his mama was a drug addict and a drunk, and he had to pull himself up by his bootstraps. And, you know, never mentioning the fact that he was writing it from some high rise in San Francisco, having been bolstered along the way, every step of the way, by his own privilege. And so he gives this prescription for how the hillbillies have to work harder, and they've got to quit relying. You know, a bunch of Republican talking points. And in fact, he was mentored by that horrible woman at Yale, that professor who describes herself as the Tiger Mom, and was in charge of grooming law students. She groomed law students for Brett Kavanaugh to be clerks, and taught the girls, taught the women how to look a certain way.
Right, so it'd be acceptable to Justice Kavanaugh, or Judge Kavanaugh, basically.
Amy Chua?
Yeah, that's her.
Chua.
Hey, by the way, the Buffalo Blue Jays are ahead in their game.
Oh, and Jimmy suggests a new name for them.
Yeah?
Yeah, the Buffalo Hot Wings.
Oh, my God. That's going to give them a cowbell. Like that.
Yeah, I got a cowbell.
Okay.
And I need to send out some thanks. Thank you to Herbert. Thank you, Herbert, very kindly for jumping in. And thank you to Steve and Miss Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. That gets us down to 154 to finish the week, and that knocks out Ronan's challenge in memory of Michael Brooks. Thank you very kindly. So 154 down from 540 is a pretty good lick, and thanks to our anonymous friend for the challenge that got everything started this evening. Mike in Cascadia just jumped in with $25, so that takes us down to 129. Thanks, Mike. Thanks a bunch. And Mike is on the ground in Portland, or greetings from what used to be Portland. I just entered Portland. No sign of Antifa yet, but the devastation is shocking. I have my mask, ski goggles, and bike helmet for personal safety. I don't plan on sticking around past 11 p.m., 12 a.m. is at the very latest, and I don't plan on being anywhere near the little green men. Just a small act adding my voice and presence and standing up to fascism. Mike, if you'd like to send me some idea of some idea of where you are, I know Jude would love to meet you and just, you know, get to know you there. And I'll pass that on to her. Yeah, Mike's tongue is firmly in cheek, sending photos of bombed out World War II rubble. Of Portland, and he's got a nice sign ready to go: "Smash Fascism." Glenn in San Diego sent this along. Bev Barnum, the founder of the Wall of Moms in Portland, during an interview with Michael Moore last night, discussed the rumors of live ammunition possibly being used by the feds tonight. She said because of that, she will not officially call the moms into action tonight so as not to allow Trump to blame Bev or the moms for anyone killed or wounded. However, she asked any of them who choose to come out anyway to gather at the Salmon Street Fountain. There they will attempt to draw the feds out from behind their fences and barricades and onto the streets, where they will become the illegal presence. That would leave the goons more vulnerable to being apprehended themselves. I hope the moms have their rental vans at the ready. That's scary. Because, you know, I have no doubt that they would like to use the any excuse they can get their hands on to engage in deadly force.
If that happens, Bob, then the National Guard has to be called in.
If there's any possibility of it happening, I think they should be there to prevent it.
I agree.
You can't wait for them to do something outrageous because they're just looking for a reason to do something outrageous.
And think about what they're doing, what Cocknocker did with the consulate in Texas. This is, it's so, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but
it's ham-fisted. It's ham-handed.
I mean, look at it. He's setting up all these violent or trying to, and then he's going to bring in, you know, all this stuff against China, and they were saying that the Chinese consulate was a, a spy something or other. This is, I mean, and you know what? Let me say one thing that occurred to me maybe about a month or two ago. Does anyone remember where they diverted troops from Germany to Saudi Arabia? Or not diverted, but sent troops from Germany to Saudi Arabia? That happened, right?
I seem to recall, yeah.
You know what really started getting me thinking was around that time they were blaming Iran for stuff that was going on in Afghanistan. And given those two things, I was wondering if he's going to try to start something in with Iran as well.
Well, there's reason for concern, Steve, because there's another story out there. And it touches upon Iran. Rouhani, the president, Hassan Rouhani, recently said that 25 million Iranians may have already been infected with coronavirus. And that is orders of magnitude higher than the official state tally. And it's scaring the daylights out of the Iranian people. He said that he told the virus task force meeting last Saturday, our estimate is that up to now 25 million Iranians have been infected with this virus. And he said 30 to 35 million more may face infection. And then said Iran has not achieved herd immunity. Of course, herd immunity is chimerical. There's not going to be, with absent a vaccine, there cannot be herd immunity. And the thing is, the number he gave out was 100 times worse than the official infection figure that Iran had posted. Infections had climbed by 2,621 between this past Wednesday and Thursday. And so they're terrified, and I'm sure that the United States is well aware of it and could prompt us to do, not us, but them, to do something monumentally stupid. And
well, if they're weakened, wouldn't that give us cause to maybe do something equally stupid, or Israel too?
Well, as of today, a U.S. fighter jet went after an Iranian passenger plane.
Oh,
the BBC,
that's fun.
The BBC reporting, Iran reports injuries after the plane changed altitude, but the U.S. says its jet was at a safe distance. Well, you know, we've blown Iranian jets out of the sky before, full of innocent people.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the larger issue, is that with this bunch of miscreants and malcontents, bootlickers, lick spittles, foot pads, highwaymen, cut purses, and thugs, anything becomes possible.
Well, Bob, you've got these two world leaders that got one foot in the prison door.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's... It's impossible to even guess what comes next. But it's...
And let's not forget about Korea. That's getting more fun, yeah, too.
But it's clear that they're trying to gin up actual warfare in the streets of Portland. And it's infuriating because, once again, it's one of those moments where we learn that our system, you know, inherent bugs in our system have been exposed and exploited, and no good will come of it. You know, there was a judge's ruling yesterday telling the little green goons to that they could not arrest journalists and observers at the protests unless a crime had been committed, that orders to disperse would not apply to journalists and observers. But by using that caveat language, you know, unless a crime's been committed, well, they'll just say a crime was committed. Ah, well, he was jaywalking. And don't think that they won't, because they do not operate in anything resembling good faith.
The other thing to keep in mind is that before the green goons showed up, the nightly tally of protesters was in the 200 to 250 neighborhood. And then the green goons showed up, and now all of a sudden it's 1,000, 2,000 type people. So it's this clear escalation based on the response.
Yeah. And it seems like, and I'm not wanting to see violence, but people exercising their First Amendment constitutional rights damned well deserve protection against an overreaching jackboot government. And so I don't know if that's the Portland police. I think there's enough distrust of the police that it probably is not a good idea. And it seems more to me like the National Guard should be called out. And as we discussed, it's not all that difficult. They simply make it clear that the instant that the little green goons step outside the courthouse or outside the curtilage of the courthouse, that they are in violation of the law. They do not have law enforcement powers outside federal property. As was noted earlier, what they usually do is if they're going to make an arrest, they'll do the detention, they'll detain, and then they will hand off to local law enforcement.
But thinking back to the Mexican border, where a border guard shot across the border and killed an individual, and that individual was found to have not violated the rules of the United States by discharging the weapon. If the green goons fire off a, quote, non-lethal projectile and kill somebody on state land, not federal land, is the mere act of firing the projectile sufficient to charge under state law a violation of the restraining order? And this would also include tear gas. If they throw out tear gas into the street, which is city Portland property, not federal property, have they violated the restraining order?
Well, I don't know that is there a restraining order in place for anything but the journalists and observers?
Don't know.
No, I don't think so. But I think there, Billable Rick might want to chime in on this, or Steve. The other thing that's at play here is posse comitatus. And they can claim that they're law enforcement, but they're basically using paramilitaries to enforce, federal paramilitaries to enforce the law. And that seems like they're in some really, really gray territory.
Well, who's going to decide whether they're in violation of the law under posse comitatus?
Yeah, you know? Probably the same federal judge that let the Bundys walk.
Or, you know, if it goes ultimately up to the Supreme Court, what's going to happen there, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they used the army to suppress the bonus marchers, and apparently there were race riots in Washington, D.C. after the First World War they used the army for. The more I read about it, the more I find out that they've used the army left, right, and center. Did you say, what's his name, Billy Mitchell bombed the West Virginia coal miners that one year? Was he with the Army Air Force?
I mean, yeah, he was Army Air Corps, and he wanted to test out his new theory of air superiority.
So he bombed the miners. But so you get my point. Apparently the military has been much more active in suppression than I realized, or that, you know, you might think under Posse Comitatus.
Well, but the thing is, Posse Comitatus applies to law enforcement actions, not insurrections.
Oh, so if you define it as an insurrection, then you get to use the military? Okay. Yeah. Is that the right? Is that how they're
saying? I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
Okay. Boy.
You can't use military to
merely arrest people?
To enforce speed limits.
Okay. But if you say, "Oh, now you're an insurrection," then you can whack them.
Yeah.
And how you define that is another, you know, very gray area. Find one person saying the wrong thing and you can arrest, you know, 500.
Well, you basically have a federal declaration of an insurgency and, you know, and then you go ahead and use the military to quell the insurgency.
Yeah, I just don't know who that federal person is, but it's probably just any old Joe who makes that decision and then.
No, I mean, that's, remember, we're still operating under a state of emergency.
Who's we? What do you mean?
The United States is still under a state of emergency.
Which one is that?
Trump's.
Oh, I didn't know he declared a state of emergency. No, I'm not up on it.
Yeah, months ago.
So you're saying.
And that gives him powers that he really hasn't used.
Okay.
I mean, that was pre-COVID.
Bob, that's from the caravans?
Yeah, that goes back to the caravans. That's 2018.
Caravans. Oh, God. Those caravans, I tell you, they really kicked our ass. I mean, they committed so much crime. It was amazing. You know?
We are overwhelmed with taco trucks.
Can I bring up one more thing that's happening in the news?
Yeah.
South Texas, Corpus Christi area, where our friend John Broderville lives, is about to get whacked by Hurricane Anna.
Oh, perfect timing. Jesus. Batten down, John, batten down. I'd completely missed that one. Well, y'all, it's been a great conversation. Our Friday conversations most usually are. For anybody else who wants to join in, the front porch will now shift to the back porch, and that conversation will continue. And a general reminder that there's a fresh dose of Malloy at the dispensary. And it will be administered at headon.live at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. This is the most enjoyable place to listen to Malloy. So stick around for that, maybe. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air in whatever manner. And also, in whatever manner you so choose, thanks for sharing your precious finite time engaging with the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky there at the head of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Remember, if you use smile.amazon.com, and you can access that from the app, too, then a small portion of your purchase proceeds go, if you select Coal River Mountain Watch as your recipient, a small portion of your purchase proceeds go to Coal River Mountain Watch, and that's a big help for a grassroots organization like CRMW. But always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And please remember, stay home if you can. This is getting worse, not better. If you have to go out, Wear your mask, wear your gloves, wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. Keep your social distance. Beware of anyone burbling about OSHA or the ADA or the HIPAA or what their rights are, or they want to see your lips, or masks don't work because you can still smell a fart when you're wearing pants. All that idiocy. Avoid anyone wearing any kind of Trump memorabilia or anything that suggests maggothood. Avoid them like the plague, because they are. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.